Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another week of the NFL season means another shot at winning big at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. New customers can bet just $1 on any NFL game and win $100 in free bets if either team scores a point. The last 0-0 tie in the NFL was in 1943, so I'd say that's a no-brainer. If a sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, DraftKings won't leave you empty-handed. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contests. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the promo code THPN. Throw down $1 on any NFL game and win $100 in free bets if either team scores a point. That's promo code THPN this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 years or older, New Jersey, Indiana, and Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit and a $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Want to go, pretty boy?
Two minutes by yourself and you feel shame, you know, and then you get free.
The only thing better than a glass of beer is tea with Miss McGill.
All right, out in Long Island. Finally, hey, he's not going to give her the Lazito. He's going to give us the Lazito. Who do I have on the line? But Joe Lazito. Joe, how are you doing today?
Doing awesome, man. Thanks for having me on. I've been looking forward to this ever since we decided to do it. So I'm ready to rock and roll.
No, absolutely. Thank you very much for coming on. And yeah, like I said, this is kind of weird to not be doing my big intro talking about the network and then, you know, your merchandise. Well, we can get into your merchandise, but, well, first of all, you know, of course you have your own show. As I mention every week on the show, but, Coliseum Chronicles, it's a New York Islander enforcer podcast. How's that been going for you? What are your thoughts on the podcasting world in general right now?
Well, first I honestly, and I know we joke around a lot, but seriously, I just want to thank you because the amount of time that you give to promoting my show every, well, I'd say twice a week, but what you say and what you say about me, I really appreciate that. And, you know, all your listeners, anyone that's given my show a chance, I appreciate that. But thank you for constantly pumping my tires. And, you know, I'm very grateful for that. So, like I said, as much as we fuck around, I do want to say that in all seriousness. And, oh God, as far as, you know, my show, you know, it's going good, man. You know, like you've been talking about lately where the whole guest thing goes in ebbs and flows. And I happen to be on a good streak right now. But that could change in a heartbeat. I mean, we've all been through it. So, I've been real fortunate. Had some really good guests. I got, Rick Hayward recently and, Matt Karkner. I got some really good feedback on those episodes. And, Vern Smith, I think was in between those two. I got good feedback on that. So, I mean, if it's not fun, I'm not doing it anymore. And it's still fun. It's frustrating at times, but for the most part, it's fun. And, you know, as far as, podcasting in general, you know, I know I'm not pumping my own tires, but I'd say there's a lot of mediocrity out there, and maybe I'm included in that. I don't know, but I know I work hard and I try. But the state of podcasting in general is something that we could do a whole episode on.
Well, I read somewhere recently, it was just the other day, that there are more hockey podcasts than there are NHL players. And I was like, oh, I actually thought I was just like, oh yeah. And I'm like, and probably 90% of them shouldn't fucking have podcasts. But I mean, of course, then again, like you said, maybe I'm including ourselves in that. I mean, there are a few people that would be like, yeah, we should be included in that. But, I'm trying to think, how long have you been doing it for? Cause I'm trying to think when I initially had you on way back when, but I think that was on my original show when I wasn't on the network yet, and I don't think you were doing a podcast yet.
No, I think no, definitely not. And I think I started I gun to my head, I'm gonna say Christmas week this year will be 2 years that I've been doing it. I'm pretty sure that's when I started, was about Christmas week 2 years ago. I know that when I decided to do one, I had reached out to a lot of the players that I've kept in contact with just to kind of get a feel if they would be interested in coming on the show. Because if they would have said, nah, I don't know, then, you know, if I'm reaching out to 25 guys and five guys are saying that they'll do it, then at that point I would have just said, well, I'm not going to bother. But I did take some time to do that, and most of the guys were receptive. So, you know, then you have to figure out how to do this. I mean, my setup is definitely not as elaborate as most people's. My $20 gamer headset and a laptop here. But I think I started preparing in October, and I think I went live with I did an introductory episode, and then the first actual guest episode was, of course, part one of the Dean U and Epic. So I think that was released the end of December in 2019.
There you go. Yeah, well, you started off with that great interview with Dean Ewan, and I always laugh because, of course, my first one was with Josh Mazur, who turned out to be an awesome guest, and it was like, oh, shit, we got spoiled out of the gate. If I'd only known. Yeah, if I'd had, like, a couple shitty ones right in a row, maybe I would have shut it down right away, but I actually, it was like him and then Dakota Hodgers, and then, you know, it was like, oh, this is actually going pretty good. This is easy shit. I could just phone these guys up and boom, I get 2 hours out of them, and this is just great. They answer all my questions. Oh shit, if I'd only known, Joe, if I could go back and talk to myself. But that's
just to go on what you're saying, I apologize, I stepped on you there already. I'll probably do that 20 times, but I think what happens is, and I'm speaking more as a listener, you know, basically, like I said, listen to your show, listen to Alex's show every second of every episode, and the finished product is always something that's very enjoyable. And it's kind of like, you know, people always say you like hot dogs, but you just want to know how they're made. Well, you know, like I can speak for myself, and I feel comfortable speaking for yourself and Alec, like the work that goes into it to get that finished product out there. And that includes, you know, research and time. And then if you're going back and forth on the phone with these guys, you know, because everybody, you know, most of these guys are working jobs now. You know, they're not, they didn't make $10 million a year when they played. So they're working regular jobs, whether it's 9 to 5 or overnights or whatever. So to try to match up schedules, it's a lot of work. And, you know, I think it's a credit to people who do their shows correctly, that they make it look easy. And, you know, and I think you're one of those, and Alex one of those, and a few of the other shows that I listen to. But really, if the finished product is enjoyable, then that's all that counts. But for people who don't put content out, I don't think they fully grasp what exactly goes into it. So, but like I said, I do, and I appreciate the content that you put out every week.
Well, thank you. I don't know if I'm exactly thrilled that all of a sudden you're bringing up fucking part-time Ole. Four minutes into this thing, and that mud show out in Florida, I don't know, you know, I mean, he's probably going to say that you and I were recording this at, you know, at the seniors home in Florida.
After the blue light special, right?
Exactly. You got to hit Denny's there at 4 o'clock to get the early bird, but yeah.
Yeah. In Del Boca Vista.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're gonna play.
Great nickname, by the way. I say it every week. I absolutely love that nickname, and I just think it's genius is in its simplicity. I absolutely love part-time Ole. So,
well, the funny part was I was trying to say Ole Salen and I couldn't get it out, and I just went with Ole. I cut myself off, and I was just like, all right, part-time Ole's even better, actually. But
it's perfect. Yeah. Perfect.
I said, well, maybe if we wrap up this list here, maybe we'll get him on the phone. Maybe we'll do a group chat at the end. You and I could both chastise him on the air. Yeah.
What? I'm up for anything.
Yeah, I think we might have to do that. But for the listeners out there, what I got Joe on the horn here. And, I mean, we're not going to talk Islanders or anything like that. Well, we got a few Islanders to talk about. But did I even say the episode? This is episode 149, if you're keeping score at home. I don't even know if I said that at the start, but oh, well, whatever. But Joe, for those that don't know, you were a contributor to, for the younger listeners, like part-time Ole, he's not going to have a clue what I'm talking about. But for the older listeners, back in the day, before the internet's machine and all that stuff, and social media and all this nonsense, we had to do it the old-fashioned way and go to the bookstore and get magazines to the newsstand. And there was Tough Guy magazine that came out once a year. And that's where I first read the name Joe Lazito, and he was a contributor, and you did all the rankings and everything. And how many issues of Tough Guys came out?
You know what?
I believe it.
I'm talking about how much preparation I do. You think I would have said, oh yeah. Well, I want to say total, and I didn't work on all of these. If I, again, gun to my head, if I had I'd say maybe 7, but I didn't work on all of them, and there was one that was more geared towards power forwards. And I think the first two might have been like hockey heroes, enforcers. It was all done by hockey stars, but then they changed it up to tough guys. And in the tough guy series, it may have been 5 or so. But like I said, I think I worked on 3, maybe 4. But overall, there might have been 7 or 8.
Yeah, well, of course, regular listeners will know I'm trying to sell my condo and move, so all my shit's packed away in a Rubbermaid tit out in the sitting out in the Quonset out at the farm. So I couldn't. I know I have every issue except for the first one. I think the first one's blue and it's got Probert on the cover. I think I don't have that one, but
okay,
I have the rest of them. They're all,
yeah.
Of course, mine are all tattered and torn because, of course, I'd take all the pictures out, right? Slap them in my locker and everything else because where else are you going to find color goon pictures, right, back then? But so what came first? Was it the Fischler books or these?
Actually, the first thing that came, first things first was this all happened when I was working for Bruce Bennett Studios. And the first thing I actually did was there was a magazine in Norway, Sweden, and Finland called Pro Hockey Magazine. And every month they had a feature on a different enforcer. They called it Ice Fighters. So we supplied the pictures for them. And the Stein, the guy who was they were published in all three countries. Stein was based in Norway. He would come by a couple times a year. He was a big Rangers fan. So he would come by to get pictures and stuff, stay a couple of weeks, I guess, go to some games. And we just got to talking one day. And I said, listen, if you guys want to get me a press pass, I could actually interview these guys in person. Because, again, dating ourselves, what they would do was submit – a bunch of questions via fax. They would fax it to the team, and then they would, I guess they would hope that the players would fill out the questions and then send it back. So this kind of eliminated the uncertainty there. So he was more than happy to do that for me, and I did that for them for a couple of years. And then similarly to that, we also did the photos for Hockey Stars. And there was, you know, they would do these, I guess maybe a few of the issues actually came out, I think, before I was working there. So I was just picking them up as a fan. And then one year it came out, and it might have been the year, like the power forward type year. And I was, you know, I wasn't a fan of that issue. So I would speak to them. And I think, again, it was just trying to make the most of an opportunity where you put yourself out there. And I had mentioned to them, hey, I'm, you know, I'm very much into hockey fights and everything like that. So if you want, I'm more than happy to, you know, help with this stuff as much as you want me to or as little as you want me to, but I'd love to help contribute. And we had a trial run the first year, and they enjoyed what I did. And I did think I did it for the last few issues. And then they went, I think they changed the name of the magazine, and then it was it. And then the thing with Fischler, I've actually never met Stan. I have a good friend of mine, Anthony. He actually worked for Stan for a while, but I didn't even know Anthony back then. I was in the press box at the Nassau Coliseum, and there were these two people sitting next to me. They were kids. They were two of Stan's interns, and they were talking about fighters and everything. So I was just being nosy, you know, like I could hear their conversations and everything. And I just, again, putting yourself out there, I said, hey, just a question. Are you guys talking about Fischler's Bad Boys books? Yeah, we are. You know, there's another one coming out. And so I said, again, just introducing myself and saying, you know, I'm very much into that aspect of hockey. If there's anything that if there's a role, you know, that I could fulfill for this book, I'm more than happy to. And then that was it. So it was that I helped on one book. That was the Ultimate Bad Boys. That was the one with a shirtless Brent Severin pounding away at Aaron Ward on the cover. So that's really the chronology of my involvement with these publications. And, you know, just a word to you kids out there, you know, like if you're confident in anything that you do, if the opportunity arises, just put yourself in the situation, and just the worst anyone can say is no. And that's really what it was. Any one of these people could have said, nah, we're good, but they gave me a chance, and it worked out for me.
No, absolutely. And well, Stein from Norway, it wasn't that asshole Jukka or whatever from Finland, was it?
No, I don't even know. Jukka probably would have been in diapers back then.
Yeah, probably.
You know? And just, you know, one more thing. We were speaking about part-time Ole, and before, when you and I were texting back and forth about this issue, and we were talking about how it's actually been 25 years since this issue has been out, is Ole even 25? I don't even think he's 25 yet.
If he is, he just turned 25. I believe he just turned 25. So, yeah.
This is older than him.
Exactly. These pieces of paper are older than Ole here. Yeah. So that's how far back you and I go here. But I remember just like when these magazines first came out, I mean, it was just, this was the ultimate, right? Because it was just like you never, I mean, the hockey news or whatever, I mean, before it turned completely garbage. I mean, they would do the odd fight thing or maybe have a little odd fight article, but, and the Hockey Stars magazine now and again might have a write-up on a guy. But for the most part, and again, no internet or anything like that, there was no information on these people, right? So it was all box scores, or if you were lucky enough to get fight tapes, which comes to my next question. Of course, for the magazines and whatever, you did rankings and whatever, again, before the internet and YouTube. Who are you getting your fight tapes from?
Back then, I think I was getting the season compilations from Nicky V. Yeah. So I think there was a local guy here on Long Island named Rob, who I used to get them from, and then I started chatting with Nikki, and then we would just, I don't know, swap stuff and everything, and I was getting the season compilations from Nick, who, by the way, has an ad in this issue. I think he had ads in all the Tough Guy magazines. But yeah, that was it. Like you say, it's not like I could go to YouTube and plug in Tony Twist or Sandy McCarthy. It was, you know, if you want to know the process, I don't know if I'm jumping ahead here, but literally the process to doing this was and again, this is all hand. I'm not, there's no internet at my house or at anyone's house at this point. So I basically have a notebook or a pad, and I just make a list of every team, and I write down who the fighters are. And, you know, you could, once you write down, if a team had four guys, you could probably cross out at least two of them on most teams. And most teams, it was just one guy, let's say, but some teams had two, kind of like who could potentially be in the top 25. And I'd narrow it down to probably 35 or 40 guys, and each guy would get a section of the pad or the book, and then it's pretty much just get the list of the tape, get the tape, and pretty much fast forward play, and making notes, and then coming up with something at the end. So it was pretty time consuming, to be honest, but it was watching fights, so it wasn't so bad.
Well, it was like that kind of a labor of love, right? You know, but yeah. Well, I know, and like you said, you were kind of interviewing the guys and you were around them. I know you have a lot of contact, especially with the Islander guy, Fakoda and Bomber and those guys. But was there anyone that, like, because I mean, you know, like, because obviously the guys saw the magazine. Did any of them ever be like, hey, what the fuck? 13, are you serious? You know?
No, you want to know who used to get the biggest kick out of the magazine? And I swear to God, he'd always ask me, when's it coming out? And that was Brad May. And we would always talk about the guys in there, and he would actually give me shit for putting him in the magazine and not Rob Ray. And one year we were sitting at the Marriott, and we were bullshitting, and I had a copy of the magazine, and he just takes it and he goes, look, and he's, you know, whoever's number one, whoever's number two, like he's going through like the top five. He goes, these guys are fucking machines. He goes, I can't compete with these guys. These guys are, you know, like Twist and McCarthy and Grimson and Simon, all these guys. He's like, these guys are animals. Like, he was always very, for a guy who had the career that Brad May did, you know, he was always very humble about it. And he would always be like, I don't belong in this magazine with these guys. There's no way, you know. And we actually had a philosophical talk about his role with the Sabres and Rob Ray's role. And I always said, look, and at that point, like I said, this is still the time where they're wearing the blue and gold, you know, still the time where Ray's coming out of his jersey a lot. And I've gone on record saying that I think Rob Ray was twice the fighter once he had to keep his jersey on. And we would talk about it, and Brad was very honest. And he said, look, if it wasn't for Rob Ray, I have to fight all these monsters in the front of this magazine. And he goes, because he's here, that leaves me to fight, say, the second tier guys. And he goes, I'll fight anybody. He goes, but I don't have to because we have Rob. And he goes, it takes a lot of pressure off me. So, you know, it's just the kind of guy that Brad May is, always trying to give credit to someone else. But he always got a kick out of it. But no, I don't think nobody ever gave me shit, you know. So I think Brad was the one who got the most excited for it every year.
Did I know when you talked to, and you don't have to names or anything like that. It's your stories. And, you know, it was a conversation that you guys had. But I know when talking to guys, did they ever kind of like, because I know doing the podcast and stuff, and like you do it as well, a lot of the guys are, oh no, he was tough. Oh, he's a good guy. That's like their answer to everything, right? It's like, okay, I know you didn't like half the guys you fought, man. Like, come on, you know, or whatever, right? Did you ever have a lot of guys, were they still pretty guarded with you? Or did they kind of let it down and be like, just, not even just the magazine, but they kind of like, he's a joke. Now fuck that guy. Did they ever do that with you and then just kind of give you the, yeah, but don't write that or anything? Did you get any of that?
Yeah, you know, I always say I was pretty lucky, because when I moved to Long Island in 1985, I moved to a town called Levittown, and for people that are familiar with New York, you know, that's only like a 10-minute drive to Nassau Coliseum. So once Once I got my driver's license, I was pretty much up at the Marriott, because the way the hotel and the arena are situated, it's pretty much separated by – it's in this, almost the same parking lot. So with the exception of a few players, you know, the upper echelon type guys, everyone is walking across. So it was a really good place for people to get autographs or meet the guys and everything like that. So for me, once I started driving, which is probably 88, I would say – I was up there all the time, and I would always go up there and make fight tapes for the guys and, you know, try to swap it out for sticks or whatever. And because it was the enforcers, everybody's there to see the scorers or somebody else. And, it was very rare that I had to, like, you know, get my elbows up with someone to get some of these guys time, because it just, at that point, it just wasn't a thing. So, no matter who it was, I could just wait, and then as they're walking out, I can just, like, you know, introduce myself and say, hey, you know, I made these fight tapes for you, whatever. And literally it became to the point where some guys I would that I got to know pretty well, I would go with 10 tapes. I would go with the whole season and give them that stuff. And, you know, some guys I had that kind of friendship with. So, oh, yeah, I mean, I guys would tell me stuff all the time. And they trusted me, you know. I mean, it didn't happen right away, but after you see the same person year after year, and you know, guys, I was accepted into that fraternity, let's say, relatively quickly, because I think they could tell that that I supported what they did, and I wasn't out to, you know, start any bullshit, you know, or spread anything. I mean, again, this is pre-internet, but I don't think that matters. I think they trusted me. So yeah, I heard a lot of stories. I had guys tell me, you know, make sure the VCR is going on Thursday, because I'm going to jump this guy, or I'm going to fuck this guy up or whatever. And, you know, and yeah, they would tell me who they don't like or whatever. And most of the time when they said, get, you know, make sure you got the VCR going, it came to fruition. It was always fun, because I could tell one of my buddies, or, you know, eventually when I started dating Andrea, I would say, oh yeah, this guy just said, watch this, this is going to happen. And then when it happened, like, it was just cool to kind of feel like, you know, at that age, you're like 18, 19 years old. You feel like you're the, like, oh yeah, I knew this was going to happen. So it's
like you're the insider. Like, you're the insider.
Yeah. Like for 30 seconds, you're like, oh, it's fucking great. He told me that was going to happen, and it happened. But yeah, no, I've been really fortunate. And, you know, and I, like, you know, we always say, you and I and Alec, no, you know, if it wasn't for the guys, we wouldn't have shows. And if it wasn't for how cool that I've been treated over the years, I mean, there's been times where I would meet a guy, whatever, on the way to the arena, they'd have me come down in the locker room, because it was still before the game, a couple hours before the game, throw the tape in, and they'd start asking me questions. Oh, this guy just got called up. What do you know about him? And I'm like, I still sit back and I think about it, and I'm like not only do I feel like, do I think that was pretty cool, but also, like, holy shit, these guys are really trusting me with my opinion on someone who they may fight that night. And I'm just like, that to me is, it just blows my mind. But again, I think it really is more about them. It's more about, you know, the trust that they had in me. And, you know, I don't think I ever steered anyone wrong. Although, if you want to hear a funny story, it's a picture I've posted. People have seen it on my social media. Dean Ewan fighting David Maley in a preseason game. And it just so happened that I didn't get to speak to Dean before the game. So I go to the game, and Maley lands a few shots, all lefts. And I remember after the game, I go to the Marriott after waiting for him. And I think I was talking to Wayne Doucette at the time. And Dean comes in, and he like goes, why didn't you fucking tell me he was a lefty? And I'm like, I didn't talk to you before the game. I didn't, you know, I didn't know. But he goes, oh my God. He goes, gee, I took a few there. So, you know, but I mean, Dean's a different, he's a different animal when it comes to friendship with me than everybody else. But I talk about long-winded answer, but fuck, I'm sorry about that.
Well, no, I was going to ask you, if you ask you what time it is, you're going to tell me how to build a watch, but that's all right. No, that's good. No, I'm just kidding. No, that was a great story, man. Yeah. No, and I will say from my own experience, especially back in the day, man, fight footage, that's fucking currency when you're dealing with players, man. I can tell you that. That can get you some shit when you got fight footage, because all the boys love seeing their tilts.
definitely. And then especially with the minor league guys, when you know, I remember when Chicago started with their affiliation with Norfolk, and I was in Philly at the time, and I would go down after the games and everything, and I was bullshitting with Aaron Downey, and I gave him some stuff, and he's like, "You should do our tapes." So I go, "If you get me your videos, I'll put together your tape, no problem." And then at the end of the year, I would, you know, he introduced me to Trent Yawney, introduced me to the GM, Al McIsaac, and, you know, that was it. At the end of the year, Al would send me the boxes of the Norfolk tapes, and, you know, I did them for several years from, you know, the time that Downey was there up to the time that Thornton was there. So, and then that's the thing, like, they trust you enough where they'll tell the GM, yeah, send this guy the game tapes, and they'll put together a team fight tape. So, you know, I was fortunate enough to have a bunch of contacts doing that. So once you start with the NHL stuff, and then it starts going into the minor league stuff, and then I didn't have the opportunity for junior stuff being where I live, but that's something that you would know a little bit about. But it's just, like you say, it's great because then you have stuff that nobody else has. And if a player on another team fought somebody on Norfolk that year, oh, I have that fight. Oh, do you really? I'd love to see it. And then it's just like you say, it's currency, and they're willing to, you know, they just don't want, you know, most of these guys are like, oh, what can I give you for it? And most of the time it's like, no, just take it, you know, but
yeah.
The guys, it's a simple answer is the guys are awesome and you're happy to do stuff for them. I mean, to be honest, it's, you're just happy to do it because you know, it's appreciated. No, I never mind putting in the work if I know it's appreciated, and there, it always was.
No, absolutely. And well, here, there, I learned something today already. I didn't know that was you that did those Norfolk tapes. Okay, yep. Well, there you go. Oh, yeah. The Aaron Downey Norfolk stuff. Yeah. Well,
yeah, Downey, Thornton, all those years. Jeff Paul was there, and yeah. Ender was there, and Parrott was there. Yeah, that's that all came from me.
Well, I got the Thornton stuff. I might have to talk to you about the Downey stuff off air. But that's how I first, that was my first dealings with you, was you had the 98-99 Thunder, Las Vegas Thunder stuff when Ewan was there. And yep. And you put together their tape, and I believe I sent you my Blade stuff for it. And that's how you and I started talking, because that was 98. And yep. And then it was like, oh, yeah, you're the guy from the magazines. And then it was just like, oh, like, fuck, here we are. I'm talking to Celebrity Joe, and he actually gave me the time of day, and now look at us here 20-some years later.
Yeah, I think Long Island and Celebrity Joe's, we have Joey Buttafuoco and me, so it's not a very illustrious list.
Well, and you have more merchandise than he does, so you're in the lead. So,
yeah, I guess so. I don't know how much he. Well, there are a lot of crazy people in the world. Joey Buttafuoco may be able to sell some merchandise, but you know, I don't know. But you know,
that's true.
I laugh when you call me a celebrity. Yeah, there's a lot of nuts. Joey Buttafuoco T-shirt might sell pretty well.
There you go. Mm-hmm. But no, it's funny. I didn't know you did the Norfolk stuff. Well, there we go. Yeah, and like you said, it's anytime you can kind of help the players out. I mean, now with YouTube, and they played in the NHL, whatever, it's all out there. But even still to this day, like the minor league guys and the junior guys, yeah, it's like 95% of them don't have anything. So it's like even if you can supply them with anything, it, you know, is cool. So, yeah, and to be able to help those guys out, it's always fun to help the players out for sure. But well, like we said with these magazines, you did the rankings and stuff, and I said to Joe, I said, well, I don't have my magazines in front of me, obviously, here, so could you grab one of them, send me the rankings, and we'll talk about them. Just pick one issue. So you pick the issue, and it is the 95-96 season with your rankings, or I guess your rankings would be based on the 95-96 season.
Yeah.
So I guess we're going 96-97, but you're using the year before. So look at this. I'm just confusing everybody. But
I was told there would be no math here today.
I know. Exactly. But it's funny because the reason I wanted the whole preamble and you had to watch the tapes. And so clearly you didn't see all of their fights from that year.
Well, whatever was on TV, I did. Whatever was on TV, because I would get the whole season. Because it was done at, like, when I would have done this, it would have been during the 96-97 season, so I would have had all the tapes already.
Okay.
So, yep.
because it was like, all right, so I went through their fight cards and your rankings are interesting. Some of the guys you have ranked where they are, it's interesting. Mm-hmm. And
thank you for putting that nicely.
Well, and knowing you now, mm-hmm. I can see there's some, I don't want to say Homerism, such a terrible, harsh word, but I'm thinking there's some skullduggery going on here with this list, because there's a few, and it's funny that you mentioned Rob Ray, because yep. I have, and folks, we didn't set that up or anything, the Brad May story there, but I have written with a star beside it, ask why there's no Rob Ray on the list. Yeah, because yep. because he actually had a pretty good year that year, and there's some guys, I don't want to say they had bad years, but I was like, I'd probably put Ray ahead of these guys, but
okay, go ahead.
Well, no, it's like you said, it's all up to opinion when you're watching stuff, and mm-hmm. yeah. Well, I think
obviously I can't go back into my 25-year-old brain and say what I was thinking. I readily admit, anyone that knows me knows that I've never been a fan of Rob Ray's, and again, it's in a magazine, so that shouldn't come into play. I really the jersey thing, it did bug me, and like I said, to his credit, I'll always say it, like I said earlier, once he had to keep the jersey on, I thought he was 3 or 4 times the fighter he was with the jersey off. The jersey thing was always something that stuck in my craw. And, you know, again, should he have been here, you know, thinking back, probably. And I think a lot of the grief I took from the people on the message board, especially a couple of people that come to mind right away, were Rob Ray fans. So, but that's okay. Like I said, the one thing I always said when I was getting shit for it was, listen, it's very easy to find out how to contact these people. Be my guest. If you want to do this next year, just let them know. I will step aside. It's all you. So, but yeah, no, like I said, it's all subjective. And actually, as far as the, let's call it a bias, whenever I would do this, I always had Mick Vakoda in mind, because I'm like, if I put him too high, then people are going to say, well, you know, he loves Mick Vakoda, this and that. So he was the one guy I always think I put lower on the list than maybe he deserved to be all the years. Or if I even left him off, I don't even remember, because he was the one guy that I was always cognizant of. You know, I love Mick Vakoda. I do. And I was always like, well, if I put him too high, are people going to bitch and moan about that? So I think I overthought it at times, where maybe I shouldn't have. But, you know, again, I'm thinking of it as a 51-year-old now is a lot different than thinking of it as a 25-year-old. But, I mean, listen, it's all it is my opinion on printed paper. And, you know, everybody's got opinions, so it doesn't mean that I'm right.
Oh, absolutely. And I will tell the folks listening out there, especially for the younger ones that weren't around for the fight. Well, I mean, I guess the message boards were on hockey fights too, but the initial hockey fight message boards, which I always kind of call like Fried Chicken Fight Site, was sort of the original hockey fight site, at least for me it was, that had like the most, and there was a lot of members, and there was a lot of, and that board was super active all the time, because even back then, because I mean, like all the games had tilts, and there's lots to talk about, and obviously it was a new form, the internet, and these are new, so this was all new stuff. We weren't rehashing old topics, because there was no topics made up yet. This is all new shit, new frontier for everybody. So of course, when the magazines came out, that was, I mean, there was a few issues before the internet, but then kind of into the internet age and the fight message board, all of a sudden these magazines would come out once a year. Oh man, you would get fucking drilled on those boards, man, for those rankings. Yeah. I can remember a few of, I'd love to go back on the Wayback Machine and like dig up those old things, because holy shit, because I mean, yeah. We've seen, like, people now see what social media is like and the idiocy that goes on social media. It was the same thing back then with on these message boards. You had, you know, Ray Fan 32, of course he's gonna fucking tear you a new one, or you know, whatever, Scott Parker fan or whatever. And I was just thinking, I can't, I guess it'd be 98, 99, whatever year Parker's first year was. I remember you included him in the rankings. And as a Parker, I was so, because again, I had seen him in junior, right? He wasn't new to me. I had known him for 4 years. So I had watched. So when you included him in the list, I was like, holy shit, Scott Parker made the list. This is awesome. Of course, I thought it was awesome. Numerous people on the message board sure didn't think it was awesome. But it was interesting because I would have done exactly what you did.
Well,
I would have been biased as shit. I'm not going to lie. I'd be putting dudes in that I like and fuck the guys I didn't like. And oh yeah, I totally would have done that.
Well, I think what happened with I think it was a few years before the Parker one, and I don't have the internet up, but it was when I got to the point where I was up to like the high 20s and 25. I said to myself, should I make 25 the 25th best fighter in my opinion, or should I kind of acknowledge somebody, like just something different? And I 1 year I did Jeff Odgers, the year he was on the Bruins, and they were just god awful, and they were just, I mean, beyond shitty. But every night Jeff Odgers was out there, you know, giving 100%, battling for his teammates, fighting anybody. And was Jeff Odgers the 25th best fighter that year? Probably not. But I said, you know what, this guy, he doesn't get any credit anywhere else. I'm going to give him credit. So I Odgers might have been the first. And then 1 year I did, it was the year Kyle Friedrich, I think I did Kyle Friedrich and Gordy Dwyer, like code number 25. And then it was Parker, because he was the guy coming out of Kelowna. And I was like, he's probably, even though at that point he hadn't fought anybody yet, you know, I'm like, this guy is coming out. He's like the next big thing. So should I put in the 25th best fighter, or should I not create a buzz, but kind of like, hey, this is the guy coming in and I'm really excited to see him. And I think a lot of the stuff on the board, I mean, you know, with a lot of the hate, I think, for Parker on the boards came from Kevin, who Parker lived with at the time, because I guess, you know, Kevin was, you know, good friends with him, whatever. And he'd always pump him up and everything. And I guess people grew tired of that. And I think a lot of the anti-Parker sentiment came from actually people not caring about Kevin constantly pumping his tires. I mean, I spoke to Kevin all the time. He never bothered me. He was always good to me. But I know a lot of people had issues with him. And I think that's where a lot of the anti-Parker stuff came from. So I think when I put him at 25 that year, I think it was just more an extension of that. Oh, here we go again. You know, another guy here with Parker. But I mean, that year, you know, he was going to make the NHL anyway, or I'm, you know, at least start in Hershey, let's say. But like, why would you, you know, people just, you know what it is? People need something to bitch about. I wouldn't do anything differently. I was happy that I put Jeff Odgers at 25 once. I was happy I put Parker there. And, you know, it's the way it goes. I mean, I guess the most important thing is people didn't like it all the time, but they bought the issues. And I think every year it was the best-selling issue. And really, I'm sure that's all Hockey Stars gave a shit about, was how many issues they sold. And every year, I think it was the best-selling issue.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And yeah, wild. I think, yeah, definitely the Parker hate was more due to Kevin than Parker himself, that's for sure. Because Kevin would cause a lot of shit on those boards. I talked to him a bunch of times, and he was always all right with me. I mean, I don't have any personal animosity. I know he screwed over a few people, but he never did to me. So it was, but yeah, he was, for anybody wondering, he was the guy. He actually filmed all the Parker Kelowna Jr. fights you see. It's because of him, and he filmed them. And, so he was always pumping up Parker. And I think there's like hate for Parker to this day, 25 years later, from some people on Facebook. You read it and it's like, oh my God, dude, get over it. Like, Jesus, are you serious? Like, you know, but,
I agree. I agree 100%.
Oh yeah. It's just like, what are you doing? But, not saying you got to love Parker if you don't want to, but it's like, I guess I was like, dislike him for like reasons other than, oh, he got talked about on a message board a lot. Well, that's okay. You know, yeah, it's like, whatever. You know, but
yep.
Yeah, like you said, people are not. But I was like, oh yeah, the shit that you used to take. But I will say, I can't remember what I did an episode. I can't remember what episode it was, but I had one of the magazines out, and I talked about the rankings and went through it all. And I think you called it Down on the Farm or something like that, or
yeah,
Prospects to Watch or whatever. And man, you nailed it. Like every one of those guys was just like. Like, yeah, it was like, they may not have played in the NHL, but it was like Ferrone and like all these guys that were like killers, Rocky Thompson. And, you know, like, I can't remember all the names now off the top of my head, but every name, like Blue Ann, I think was in there. And, but
yeah,
like
Darcy Harris,
McLaren,
I think was in there. That, and you know, to be honest with you, out of all the years I did the magazine, that article was the thing I had the most fun with, writing that article. That was absolutely the thing I enjoyed the most. And it's one of the things that, you know, I take pride in that I did, because, I mean, it's always a crystal ball. I mean, you know, you've been around the game for a long time, you know, the enforcer game. So, you know, you got to get a coach that likes you or a GM that likes you. But at that point, you know, I mean, anybody that likes hockey fights, you love the minors. And at that point, that was, even today when I think about it, that was the thing I enjoyed the most, that all the issues I ever did was writing that story.
No, absolutely. Yeah, and it's like I've often said the same thing with the minor league. I got a soft spot for those guys, and that's why I always like the minor league mayhem tournament so much. It's like, as much as I like the Probert one and whatever, it's got the cachet of like Twist and Chase and all Koser and all those guys. And that's cool. I like all those guys, obviously. But there's something about the minor league one where you're talking about Ferrone and Badouk and Brandon Sugden and all those guys. It's kind of like, I don't know, I have more fun with that one than I do the NHL one. But so yeah, like I was really pumped to see your like Down on the Farm thing. And because for us, it was like the names you used. Mm-hmm. Again, it sounds so funny to say, but again, we never saw some of those guys. If they were in the OHL, like we never saw Darcy Harris. I had no idea I couldn't have picked him out of a police lineup. I didn't know what he looked like, never seen him fight. But when you threw out a few like when you used Ferrone, well, remember all the Seattle tapes. So, I mean, we had seen Ferrone. And so it was cool to see him like 2 or 3 years later. Here you're talking about him when he was with the Crunch, you know, and it was like, and you see the progression. Because,
yeah, it was awesome. It was awesome.
Yeah, because that was our news source, right? Was like the magazines and that was it. I mean, or fight tapes if you were lucky enough to find some. And that was the other thing you brought up, Nick. Yeah, and I mean, people can't believe it now, but not only in that magazine, but in the back of the hockey news of all things, mm-hmm. you know, God, now you think they'd cry if there's a fight. But I mean, back in the day, they had a classified section in the back, and there was a bunch of guys in there selling fight tapes. And you'd write the magazine, and what was the guy doing the magazine? What was it? The Aggressive Hockey Report?
Yeah, I never got any of those. I never had any of those. But I did get my first tapes from the back of the hockey news here. Yep. It was Phil Davis, not his real name, and his thing was you had to buy two tapes, and it was $70. Right? Imagine that, right? Two tapes, $70. They were assorted tapes. And a buddy of mine lived around the corner, so we'd order like four at a time. I mean, how old am I? I'm probably working part time. And, you know, so to get together $70 was a big deal. So we'd order like four tapes at a time. And then we, you know, each one of us would take two and run off copies for the other two. But that was it. Yeah, back of the hockey news, Phil Davis. Those were my first fight tapes. And, yeah, like I say, you laugh now with the hockey news being so woke and everything now. But, yeah, I think that's how a lot of us got started. And there was, I mean, every week you'd have probably 8 or 9 different ads for hockey fights. And I think we chose Phil because we were in New York and he was in New York. And then eventually whoever else I ended up getting, we, like I said, the local guy Rob here in New York, and then eventually it went to Nikki. But yeah, I never, you know, the Aggressive Hockey Report, I see people posting those. I never ever had any of those.
No, I wish I would have killed somebody to have those. I didn't know anything about them, and for years I didn't know anything about them until like kind of recently. And I think it was Tony that brought them up, and then Oh, somebody put the PDFs up on Facebook, and I was Ron, and I was reading them, and it was just like, oh, I would have killed a motherfucker to have these back in the day, man. Like, that would have been awesome. And like I said, it's so archaic now for people to listen, but back then that was, man, that would have been awesome to, like, all of a sudden I'm going to start reading about the IHL and the AHL in my house. Like, this is unbelievable. You know, like, that was,
it's kind of, well, you are an old school wrestling fan too, like I am. It's kind of like, what did they call them? The sheets or whatever,
yeah.
Like all the underground newsletters, the wrestling newsletters that were out there with all the inside stuff. And like the first time you read something like that, you're like, oh my God, like it's a shock to the system. So now you get like those were all over the place when we were younger. I don't know if they still are now, probably not with the internet, but it was similar to that. And I'm sure you'll agree with this. I think for people like us, and maybe it's different for you because you grew up in Canada, but for me, people, I think, thought I was crazy with how much I love hockey fights. Like, they're just like, you buy tapes, you do this, you do this. So then when the internet pops up, I think it's almost like a shock to your system when you find, like, Fried Chicken's hockey fight site, and you're like, oh my God, there's hundreds of other lunatics out there just like me. And you kind of feel like you're part of this misfits club. And all of a sudden it's like, well, you're the guy, like, in your circle of friends, like you're the hockey fight master. And then all of a sudden there's a whole world out there that you see on the internet, and it's like these people know just as much as you do, if not more. And especially like the older people that could talk about, you know, the late 60s or the 70s, you know. And it's just like, it's sort of like a shock to the system in a way, because you're like, wow, I thought I was the only nut job out here, but apparently there's plenty of us.
Oh, completely. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like my friend, we like the fights and whatever, but I took it to a whole other level with the VHS tapes and all. Like, they didn't, you know, they like coming over and watching them and stuff. And my friend Mike and Kevin and them, a couple of my brother and stuff. But I mean, they, you know, after a couple of minutes, like, oh, okay, let's go do, you know, they didn't really give a shit. Right. But, oh yeah, I'm dubbing shit and making tapes and everything. And yeah, so all of a sudden to get on the internet and find Fried Chicken, or it was just like, holy shit, this is unbelievable. And then you start reading people's shit, and it's like, oh, I don't know as much as I thought I did. Like, I thought I knew everything. I don't know anything compared to some of these people, right? Like, yeah, but in my circle of friends, I was like the fight guy, right? And but
exactly,
yep. Yeah. But as soon as I got on Fried, it's like I knew like the Western League, I could do that better than a lot of the guys in the thing. But I mean, all of a sudden, some guy starts talking about Nick Fatiu. I was just like, I barely know who that is, right? Like, right. I mean, I'd seen him, and I had his hockey card, but I mean, I couldn't name off 10 of his fights, right? But I mean, so it was like an education, and you would read this stuff, and then, like you said, you start trading tapes, and your collection starts building, and you start learning more, and it was just like, yeah, and it sounds, like I said, it sounds so old school, but that was like the great, like I said, going back with the great thing with these magazines and the Fischler books, like, those were gold, man. Like, I read those Tough Guy magazines front to back 1,000 times each. Like, it was like you couldn't get enough of that type of thing, because, like I said, the information was so limited, and it was just this is all new shit. And I said, to this day, I mean, I know everything's on the internet and stuff, but if some dude ever came out and said, I'm gonna make a Tough Guy magazine, like, quarterly, or like, just, I'd be like, yeah, well, how much for a subscription? And here's my PayPal. I'd buy it instantly, because I would love to have, like, the internet's great, and to read stuff on the internet's awesome, but to actually have something in your hand and to hold it, I completely prefer that. Like, when I go with books, like, people, oh, do you do audio book? Nah, I want the actual book in my hand. I prefer that over, I don't know, I guess I'm just, like I said, I'm old that way. I just like to have something concrete in my hand, so.
No, I'm the same way, and you know, I'll always prefer, like, people left, like, even, you know, back when I don't read newspapers anymore, but back when I did, I would always prefer the actual newspaper. And people are like, you know, you can get that online. I'm like, yeah, I know, I like the actual newspaper. But going back to what you said, if someone would do Tough Guys right now, it would be like top four in the NHL. There's nobody left. So it would just be a top four, and you could kind of – you could make it interactive. You could put your own top four, and, you know, you can have the perforated pages, and you can go, well, if you think Ryan Reeves is number one, put him at number one, or Tom Wilson or Ross Johnson or Lucic. But that would be it. I mean, maybe you could do a top five.
Well, I don't think we'd be doing any rankings. I think it would be a completely, entirely an historical piece, well, maybe the odds, player spotlight, all three guys that fight in the issue, the up and comer. Yeah. Next year's heavyweight with three fights, so yeah.
Fuck junior hockey. Jesus Christ.
Oh yeah. No, she's done. Yeah. So it's like, and that was the other thing, like going through this and, well, like we were saying, like through text today, when you said, oh, yeah, we're going to do the 95-96 season, I was like, that's like 26 years ago. Like, it was just like, you just don't think about it, right? It just seems like yesterday. And it's like, you're just going down the list, and it's just like, my God, where did the time go? But I also always say, like, I might not have had the internet and all that stuff or phones in your pocket and all that, but I don't know. I wouldn't have traded the era I grew up in for anything. I was so happy I did. And looking back on the stuff, it's archaic and we didn't have the information. Or if we got the information, it was like whatever, 12 months later. But I'd still prefer that than now. That's for sure.
Well, same here. I always say all the time, like I was born in 1970. I almost wish I was born 20 or 30 years before that. I always say it, like when you watch old movies or TV shows and you see New York City, you know, everyone's dressed nice. The men are all in suits and fedoras and the women look nice and it's clean. And it just looks like, it's hard to believe that that's the city that I go to when I work, even though it was, 50, 60 years ago. So, yeah, I mean, I would never want to be, like my kids now, they're 21 and 18, and I wouldn't ever want to go back into and be in their generation. I'm very happy where I was, and if anything, I would go back a decade or two, maybe not the 60s because they're all hippies and everything, but I kind of like looking back and everyone is dressed nice and but that's just me. I'm a proud dinosaur, so that might just be me talking out of my ass.
Well, I'm with you. No, nope, yep. For sure. Well, for all this preamble and everything, we should probably get into this. Folks, this is the top 25, according to Joe Lozito, in 1995-96.
Yeah.
And, all right.
Well, let me just say this for people that have these issues. There was one thing that I didn't like that every year that would happen, and I would tell him every year, please don't do that. The person who did the rankings before me was one of the editors, Dave Rosenbaum, who's a really, really good guy, but absolutely hated fighting, hated hockey fights, right? So when you read the write-ups, like I did the rankings and I came up with the numbers, but when you read the write-ups, if there's anything derogatory, that still bugs me. Like while we're talking here, I'm just flipping through the pages and I'm seeing different things. And when I was looking at it before, I'm like, why does he have to write that? So that stuff always bugged me. And I think after the first year, I was like, don't write that stuff. Cause like, if we're pumping these guys up, then why would you want to say like negative shit about them? Like it just never made sense to me. But every year there was always a couple of things in there that, like I always say, like, I would say taking shots at him, I mean, like I said, other than the fact that he really didn't like hockey fights, didn't really like fighting in the sport, Dave was a good guy, but that was something that always bugged me. And as I'm looking through this stuff now, I'm like, there's no reason for that. Like I said, just these little shots, like four or five words in a sentence here or two sentences where it's kind of like you're pumping up this guy, saying, well, he fought this guy, fought that guy. And then, should be a career minor leaguer or whatever. And it's like, why would you even put something like that in there? But that, I will say that if people want to sling arrows my way for this magazine, absolutely 100%. If you don't like the rankings, send them my way. But the little shots that were taken in the write-ups, definitely not me. And it actually irks me to this day, 25 years later, as I'm looking at it now. So I just wanted to get that off my chest.
There we go. All right, sorry about that, folks. We're back at it here. I had to put it on pause. I had to go put my lasagna in the oven. my pre-made Costco lasagna that I know Joe is just seething over. The Italian in Joe is just like, you go and buy that frozen bullshit. I know it.
Well, the last few nights, Andrea made a baked ziti two nights ago, and I've just basically stuffed my fat face with it the last two nights. But yeah, I mean, frozen lasagna is not the best thing, but I'll allow it because you're not Italian. So
no. But I was gonna say, for a good old Italian boy, hearing me putting a frozen lasagna in from Costco in the oven is just blasphemy. Yeah.
Ah, yeah. You know, it's not, like I said, it's not ideal, but I'll allow it.
There we go. But all right, well, there's a few things on this list I might not allow here. We're going to go over this, and it's going to be fried chicken all over again. But 1995-96, folks, get out your time machines and go back and take the ride with us here. And, well, first of all, like we were laughing about the magazines and stuff. It's funny, like you said, you know, you do 25 guys. And, I mean, you could do 25 more back then. Like, you know, it could have been the top 50 list. I mean, or top 60. There was that many guys in the league and around. I mean, now you couldn't even do a top five. But, I mean, you know, back then you had your pick. And it's amazing how things have changed over the years. You know, every team was like two and three guys deep. But number 25 on the list was his first full year in the NHL. But the old the pride of the Maritimes, Darren Langdon.
Yeah, I mean, being on Long Island, being in New York, we get the Islanders, Rangers, and Devils. So the New York players or the Devil players, I mean, I would watch the fights just to recap them. But, you know, you watch all the games. I mean, this isn't today's NHL. Back then, I would watch all the games. And Langdon was just someone that really, to me, he came on and really made an impression with me during his rookie year. Now, kind of the opposite of say Scott Parker, where Scott Parker just wants to punch a hole through your head. Langdon, way more technical, you know, much more, you know, not comparing to Parker, but Parker was more of an assassin, where Langdon would pick you apart methodically. So so I was really impressed with him, and even going back to the preseason, I remember they played Jersey and he fought Randy McKay a couple of times. So you know, proving that I'm not biased all the time, you know, put Langdon in there and someone I was always impressed with. And, you know, like you say, the Maritimers, that's a different breed up there.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, he was a good representative for them for a while here with the Rangers. So, you know, you just, you know, you break it down the way we did. It was, you know, punch power, intelligence, reputation, quality of opposition, fighting ability. And, you know, I mean, Langdon was never known for his punching power. You know, and at that point he was a rookie. Let's say he didn't have a real reputation amongst the NHL guys, let's say, and fighting ability, you know, gave him an 8 out of 10, the quality opposition 8.5, because he's fighting everybody at that point. So, you know, I think for a rookie, I think 25 was a good spot for him. And, you know, someone Ranger fans still love.
Oh, absolutely. He was great. I was a huge Langdon fan. Well, I am a huge Langdon fan. Actually, the year before this, in the was it a preseason? I don't know if it was a preseason. It might have been the end of the year. He had a great fight with McSorley. And he's wearing, yeah, like, he's wearing like number 57 or something. Like, so yep. I think it's preseason, I think.
That's preseason.
Yeah, yeah. That fight was awesome. And I remember, yeah, I think it was, yeah, getting the tape. And it's like, who? Like, because again, who? You know, we'd never seen him. And it was just like, man, and then I got a Langdon tape from somebody, and it was a few years later. But yeah, guy technician, man, and it's fun to go back and watch now that I got more tapes and more footage and blah blah blah. But man, you go back and watch some of that American League stuff. Oh, yeah. He is unbelievable. He's at Binghamton, or it was just, yep, like, man. Oh, him and like Reed Simpson and like Ryan Vandenbosch, and those fights were like, man, Langdon was the shit, man. I don't think it's out there, but I would love to see his Dayton stuff. That one year he played Dayton when he had like 20 goals and like 400 minutes or something. I would love to see that stuff. But yeah, I was a huge Langdon fan. But
The thing about Langdon that was, I met him once. It was a short conversation. I wanted to ask him, I didn't get a chance. when the Islanders had drafted Lindros, and he played, you know, the short time he was here, especially Lindros in the preseason, his first preseason. I don't know if it was, you know, and I think Brett was, you know, I think he was a victim of the last name, and I think the Islanders rushed him. Oh, and, yeah. You know, I think it was Langdon was – him and Langdon had some battles, and they eventually fought, but – Even without that fight, they whenever they were on the ice together, it was just a battle. And I know in the first game they played, Brett turned him down. Langdon wanted to fight, he turned him down. And then you know, he even went in the papers and said that something like, you know, if no, it wasn't the papers, it was actually post game. He said, you know, I can't be taken off the ice, you know, for a guy like Langdon or whatever, you know, something like that, which I didn't really think was cool. But then. I mean, in a way, it probably was cool because then, you know, the Rangers see that, Langdon sees it, and I'm sure they're like, fuck it, he's going next game. And then next game, Langdon challenged him, or Lindros actually went up to him. I don't remember, but they ended up fighting. And, you know, I think Langdon cut him a bit, but they would always go at it. That was sort of like, you know, for the youngsters, they don't really understand this, but there's always the games within the games. And whenever the Islanders would play the Rangers, Langdon almost made it a point where he wanted to be all over Lindros, and Lindros would give it right back to him. So those were some fun times.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, Brett Lindros. Yeah, definitely a victim of the last name. Actually, yeah. Really good junior player. I mean, he had a great junior career. Big dude, had the skills. Of course, then Milbury's got to go, I think we've got the better Lindros. Like, oh,
no,
God.
That was Don Maloney.
Pardon me. I don't want
to. Listen, I want to attribute every bad thing to Mike Milbury. Trust me, I'm not defending Mike Milbury. He's done enough dumb shit on his own. That was actually Don Maloney. And I remember watching the draft, just putting, you know, face palming it, going, oh, what are you doing to this guy? So, yeah.
Yeah. Did you, yeah. Well, being around Long Island, did you have any run-ins with Lindros?
Yeah. And I think the way it broke down, Bonnie was always around, I guess at the time when, before Brett was in the league, I think Carl and Bonnie, their parents, they were both in Philadelphia a lot. And then I think once Brett was here, Carl ended up spending a lot of time here with Brett. So I actually would speak to both of them a lot. And Brett was really, really cool. And you know, I know back in the day, you know, Flyers fans and the Bob Clark probably weren't big fans of Bonnie Lindros, but Carl Lindros was awesome, really, really fun guy to speak to, and Brett was really cool, really humble. So, I spoke to him plenty of times. Really, really good kid, and his dad was awesome too. His dad would talk about hockey or talk about fights and everything. So, I was a big fan of Brett Lindros, and I feel bad the way his career worked out, but very, very cool kid, and his dad was awesome too.
Well, it's funny, and like I've had players on, and we've talked, you know, off air or whatever. Well, on air a little bit, but off air as well about Lindros and like the parents and stuff. Yeah, you'd always hear the stories back in the day, and Flyer fans like to go on and on. I'm sort of on Team Lindros and all this. I don't know. I think Clark is a bit of a fucking clown, actually, and I don't know. Not to say that Lindros didn't do a few things, but I think that's pretty overblown. I think by the sounds of it.
I mean, I think it's tough to say, especially if you don't have kids, you know, the way that I would have, I mean, I'm not a Flyers fan, so I never really, I would read what they would say, but I don't fucking know. I don't know. You know, I don't really care. But the way you feel about a situation that involves parents and children changes from when you don't have kids to when you do have kids, because everything changes, you know, now the whole, it's like when something comes up serious, let's say, and I'm just using this as an example, like I know abortion is like a hot topic right now, and people that are pro-life, and then people say, well, what if it was your daughter? And like I always say, whenever you make it personal, you're talking about my daughter or my son or my sister or my mother. Well, the rules don't apply because now you're thinking of someone who you love. So. Yeah. Now you're talking about, like, so this is Bonnie and Carl, like, negotiating Eric's contract or whatever. He's their son, you know? So it's like, what, like, I think now when I think about it, I'm like, well, I have two sons. And, you know, I would want to make sure that they got the most out of it. And you know, I guess the thing is with some of the GMs, maybe especially back in the day, you could pull some fast ones, or maybe your buddies with the agent, you cut a deal. I don't know. But they were looking out for their kids. So as a parent, I love my kids, and I would look out for my kids too. So, I mean, like I said, I think when people were critical back then, the first thing I would ask now always is, well, do you have kids? And if they say no, then I go, okay, well, I got to take what you say with that, because you don't have kids. You got to look out for them. You know, if my kid's working at the local deli around the block, I'm still going to look out for him. You know, forget about if he's working for a professional hockey team. So.
No, exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, we probably, yeah, we might be here all night if we keep going with this.
yeah. Okay.
But, well, this is me. I'm dragging it out here. But 24, Mike Peluso, who had 18 fights that year, for those wondering.
And again, I think it was, I saw him every night, saw all the games he played and everything. And, you know, again, it's a respect thing. I was neither a Mike Peluso hater or a Mike Peluso fan, just someone that played for another team that I enjoyed watching fighting. And, you know, the amount of fights that he had, and he fight anybody, obviously, you know, just a respect thing. Like, even in the write-up, I know I, you know, brought up his balance, and I think Dave, of course, made it sound a little worse than I put it. But, you know, there's something to be said for, you know, his contribution to New Jersey. And I think even at this point, it looked like Reed Simpson might take his place, and I think that's eventually what happened. But, you know, again, it's like, you know, at this point in the rankings, you know, you got, you know, 7.5 punching power, intelligence 7, reputation 7. It's always tough, because then you gotta kind of make the numbers almost fit, and to say, well, what's his reputation? I mean, I'm thinking, what is his reputation from the outside? It's not like I got to ask all the players, well, what kind of reputation does Mike Peluso have? So again, it's all opinion, but Peluso's a guy I always respected, and you know, I always try to do my best to try to get everyone represented in these things, and you know, I had no problem with Mike, you know.
Absolutely. No, I'm a big Peluso fan. I mean, yeah. You know, he looked like he was on roller skates sometimes. I mean, his balance was terrible, but I mean, he'd throw the big lefts, and you know, he had the mullet flying, and I was down with Peluso. Hell, he won me my goon draft one year, so I can't complain. The year he had 408 minutes in Ottawa, so Peluso's all right by me. He made me a few bucks, but he had a great run that year when they won the cup. He was a big contributor with that. Him and McKay and Holik, and then that was a hell of a line, man. They were, I'm down with Peluso. Well, here you go, number 23, the Chief Scott Daniels. This is kind of his first full-time season in the NHL, and another guy, Western League guy, was dominant in the Western League back in the day in Seattle and stuff, and then, you know, bounced around the minors, and then came up in the NHL. See, I got to say good shit about him because Joe Mama's listening. So, it's a Saskatoon boy. So, he fought Petonsky and Walker and Rive. And, hey, he's on the list. It's cool. You know, get him in there. Get Scott Daniels some ink.
Yeah, and that was a year because when it came to print, he was there's a picture of him with Hartford, coming off his year in Hartford, but he had actually signed with Philly, and I was a big fan of the Daniels, Jansons, and Chase lines. So yep. I'm sure you were too.
Yep.
And there was always a part of me that respected guys like Chief that, you know, had to pay their dues, and I couldn't put him in the top 10, let's say. I mean, especially after just one rookie season, I don't think I could bump anybody from the top 10. But I think once you get to the second half of the top 25, guys are interchangeable. And it was always, like I said, just I liked watching, you know, to me that line made Hartford watchable, and they always made things happen. And why not give the guy a little credit here and for the journey that he took, and get him in there. And then next thing you know, he's in Philly, and I'll pump my own tires here. where I wrote, we'll probably play on a line with Dan Lacroix and Dan Kordick. So look at me, I'm a genius.
There you go.
What I'm saying? It was like, yeah, so I'm an absolute genius. I mean, everybody knew that was going to happen. But yeah, no, I always like Chief, and I'm happy to have him in there.
Absolutely. Well, here we go. 22, Mick the Quick. There we go. We got Mick Fakota. It was his, I think it was his last year in New York, and he played 33 games that year and had 16 tilts, and, you know, with Domi and, you know, and that type of thing. Five preseason tilts. So, yeah, that was sort of the end of an era.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm not about to pump my show on your show, but
no, feel free. That's why you're on.
Yeah, no, I mean, the interview I did with Mick, I mean, that was the first really super long interview that I did with him. And this period of his career was not the easiest, because this is around the time that Milbury took over. And, you know, it's, I appreciate what he was doing at the time, because he was basically fighting an uphill battle. There was, you know, Milbury, it seemed like, was trying to just get everybody in here to take his place. You know, I mean, one of the good things I think Mike Milbury did was give Steve Webb a chance. You know, kid that played a few games in the IHL the year before, but mostly Colonial League kid, and he worked his ass off, made the team, and had a nice career for himself. You know, you get Ken Bélanger in here too, but it always seemed like no matter what Mick did once Milbury took over, it was never enough. And you know, and going back to what I was saying earlier, like as far as bias stuff goes, Mick was always the one guy that I was like, well, people are going to say I like him too much. So he was the one guy I was always cognizant of. I don't want to put him too high, but I always thought he warranted a spot. So and this, like you say, he had almost he fought every other game that year. So you know, if I keep talking about Mick, we're going to be here, like you say, all night. So I'll just leave it at that. But, you know, he's one of my favorite players of all time. He's a great, great person. I'm happy to call him a friend. And, you know, if 51-year-old me is doing this magazine, he's going to be a lot higher, because I just don't give a shit anymore. So
there you go. Well, for those listening, if you haven't, check out Joe's interview with Mick Fakota. It's one of the honestly, it's one of the best player interviews you're ever going to hear, because it's like in depth, and Fakota tells some great stories, and yeah, it's awesome. Definitely check it out. He's a guy had a hell of a career, right? Whatever, love him or hate him, the guy had stories, and he fought everybody and did it for a real long time. And yeah, definitely check it out. But there we go. Number well, hey, 21. We were talking about him earlier. Of course, Mayday, Brad May. This was sort of a kind of a real big breakout year for him. He had 79 games. Of course, he had the 15 goals and the 17 tilts, and you know, he had the TKO of Basil and Warren Reichel, and then he had the big knockdown on Hockey Night in Canada of Ken Baumgartner. Yeah. That was huge, because we had never seen that before. And of course, he was pretty, hit him when he was down, and I mean, that was kind of, yeah, you know, whatever. But I mean,
yeah,
I don't want to start yelling about the code, because I think that's all horse shit anyway. But I was actually surprised. It surprised me when he did it, actually, because Bomber is kind of, it's kind of a weird knockout. But it was like, but we were just really surprised that Bomber got clipped like that, because you never really saw that. Yeah. Not that I can actually, and I'm trying to think, I don't actually remember him going down like that before. And then to do it on Hockey Night in Canada, it was like, holy shit. But I was a huge fan of Brad May even before this, so I was torn over the Bomber fight, because I was like, oh, shit. You know, because I was a huge fan of both guys, so I was kind of, because you knew they were going to fight, but it was just like,
yeah,
okay, let's just have a draw. That's all I really wanted, right? But then all of a sudden, Bomber goes down. I was like, oh, shit. And then he hit him again. It was like, oh, man. But, yeah, Mayday.
Yeah, Bomber didn't go down. Even when he got his orbital bone broken,
yeah,
from Dave Brown, I don't think he went down.
No.
And sitting in the penalty box, I remember, I could see it right now, in the penalty box, feeling feeling his cheekbone and everything. I don't think he went down. So, I mean, that was huge for Brad. I mean, listen, we've already talked about it, and you know, if I had to do it all over again, like Brad May told me, Rob should be in this magazine and not me. And I think there were some people that thought I overrated Brad. And maybe that was more because he was a guy that could score, you know, 15, 20 goals a year, and he wasn't just a guy to go out there and fight. But He was always someone that impressed me. And, you know, never, you know, for a guy that was the number one pick and a guy, you know, as a rookie starting out playing with LaFontaine and McGillney, like getting thrown into that, scored the biggest goal or one of the biggest goals in team history. He was always someone that never really had an ego about him. So he would fight anybody. He was never too good to fight anybody. And he ended up fighting a lot of the guys that he would call machines. And I guess it just endeared himself to me. And I always thought he was the tougher guy for a period of time with Buffalo. But like he said, he goes, he was able to do what he did because of Rob Ray. So, you know, maybe if I had to redo it all over again, maybe I would switch him, but maybe not. But, I'm always going to pump Brad's tires. That's for sure.
Oh, the year he had this year with the one that we're talking about, I would have had him in here for sure. I mean, I would have had Ray in here too, but I mean, No, May, man, he had a big year. And like I said, there's some big knockdowns and he had some great tilts and dude had thunder in his hands for sure. Well, speaking of thunder in his hands, the next guy, and criminally underrated to this day by a lot of people, but of course is Paul Laws, who, you know, in 78 games, 31 tilts, I think Domi was first and he was second, I believe, that year. And I think the following year he had 44 tilts or something, but... Yeah, had the big fight, big knock with Walker and with Randy McKay and Kaminsky and Rudy. He had some really great fights. Fought your boy Mike McWilliam. That was a good fight this year. And, yeah, man, I fought the Laws and the Laws won. That guy's a bad dude.
I always wonder how he would be remembered if he played in a hockey market.
Well, imagine if Paul Laws played in Philly.
Oh, I mean, Philly... You know, Toronto, like Philly, because, you know, they would love a guy like that. Toronto, because he would just get so noticed there. But, I mean, listen, at this point in his career, I don't even know. Like, we didn't see the best of him yet. It was still, we're waiting to see it. And then you start seeing it. I mean, for me personally, seeing him, you know, his rivalry with Brett Lindros and later on, Ken Belanger. And you just see how hard this guy throws. And he's just, to me, he was like the perfect guy for a non-market like Florida because there was no frills about him. You know, eventually, you know, he's a guy again, through his fighting, he was able to get more ice time and he developed into a steady defenseman. And, but then he's still kicking guys' ass. And it was just simple. Well, drop the gloves and you're going to hit me and I'm going to hit you. I might throw harder than you. So you better get me quick because if you don't, I'm going to do some damage. And like you said, I say the same thing about Paul Laws, like criminally underrated because every year he was getting better and getting better. And I kind of look at Paul Laws as obviously in terms of the fans down there, how they should look at him. I kind of look at Paul Laws as like a Ken Danico or like a Bobby Nystrom here on the island where obviously Paul didn't win any cups like those other guys did, but Ken Danico was not the best defenseman the Devils ever had, although I love him, and you know how I feel about Bobby Nystrom. But Paul Laws, I mean, he's the Florida guy. Like, he was there. Once they got him from Pittsburgh, that was it. He was Mr. Florida Panther, battled everybody, and he put a lot of guys down. So I'm happy to have him in here. Probably this was the highest he was ever, or lowest, however you say it. I'm sure issues after this, I would imagine he had to be ranked higher, but I felt this was a good spot for him at this point.
For sure. Now I lost my play. Oh, number 19, D-Mac, Darren McCarty, 63 games, 15 goals, 19 tilts. You know, again, starting to come into his own. You know, Walker had a good fight with Richardson and Marchment. You know, the KO of Tenorti. It was sort of becoming... You know, the Probert and Koser era was gone and D-Mac was kind of coming in and, yeah, I mean, well, you had Stu there too that year, but, what were your feelings on old, Darren McCarty?
Yeah, I think like you say, you start out with Probert, then he's riding shotgun with Stu. And I think the thing I really liked about him was I'd spoken to him. I would speak to him every time he'd come here and he had that enthusiasm for the job. He reminded me a lot of Brad May in a way where he was, no matter how old they got, they were still like a kid, you know, they never lost their zeal. And he always had that enthusiasm for it. He'd always be willing to talk about fighting and everything like that. And, you know, I'm a Darren McCarty fan. And I know he's one of the guys I think people gave me shit for putting in here instead of other guys. And again, we always go back to Rob Ray. But, you know, I think at that point he was still very young, and he just brought something. You know, it was the Red Wings were exciting to watch because, you know, guys were still hesitant, I think at that point, still to go with Stu Grimson, but they might want to go with Darren McCarty. And he, you know, he had the lefty stance there and he loved doing it. And so I'm a Darren McCarty fan. I can't say enough about the guy.
Oh, for sure. No, big McCarty fan. Well, number 18, I'm another fan of this guy, old Rudy Poshek. And man, Rudy, 57 games, 13 tilts. I can guarantee you folks, none of the 13 were boring. It's just wide open and toe-to-toe, and you hit me, I'll hit you, and some great fights with Laws and Stoyanov and Jay Wells and Marty. And if people want to see one of the best hockey fights ever, this is completely not in the NHL, but it was a junior fight, him and Jim Latos, Latos. It's on YouTube. It just surfaced. Type Poshek and Latos in and go watch that fight. It's ridiculous. And they're wearing the Cooperalls. It's in Kamloops. It's tremendous. But, yeah, Rudy Poshek. I love me some Rudy Poshek.
The Poshek-Latos fight, I had heard about that when I first met Dean Ewan because he was in the league. And he said that fight, the word of that fight just traveled through the league just like wildfire. And for years, it was the white whale for fight fans like us. Like, oh my God, are we ever going to see it? Are we ever going to see it? And like you say, we finally saw it. But Rudy's a guy I always really liked. I just from his look, like especially back in the day with the Rangers, he looked like a boxer. He had the old knucklebuster helmet on and everything. And I don't really care for a lot of Rangers, but Rudy was a guy I was always a big fan of. And then when he goes to Tampa and he gets a chance to be a regular, and he just, like, to me, he's still, if I had to do a top 10 Tampa list, he's probably still my number one guy. And really, it's funny because when you meet him, he's just a soft-spoken guy, really big-time chef at the time. He would always cook for the guys. He was a culinary wizard as well. So, yep. But Rudy, to me, the league, guys like Rudy Poshek, where it's just grab on and chuck him. I mean, I miss those guys. And, you know, you think about when he eventually went to St. Louis and they had him and Twist and Chase. It's like, you know, like Twist and Rudy alone would be like a fearsome tag team. Then you throw Kelly Chase in there. I mean, I love Rudy Poshek. I just do. And I probably wanted to put him higher this year because I am very biased. I am a big Rudy Poshek fan. So I don't know. Maybe I had to put him low on this one because I didn't want to get grief, but I fucking love Rudy. So
absolutely, Rudy, wow, that's funny, his looks. Yeah, old Rudy. Yeah, he wasn't Rudy looks like he ran a 100-yard dash in a 90-yard gym, you know. It's
absolutely
yeah, but yeah, he kind of looks like a catcher's mitt, but that's all right. Yeah, old Rudy. Actually, and I think in this magazine there's like a color picture of him, and he looks like a fucking serial killer. There's like blood on his jersey and shit, and it's like, oh, it's like the greatest picture ever. Well, number seven. Oh, there we go. Speaking of Kelly Chase, there we go. Saskatchewan boy. I believe this was his year in Hartford, and he played 55 games, had 23 tilts. An awesome fight with Alex Doyanov. Oddly enough, we never thought I would see it, but he fought Twist that year, which was kind of weird to see. Had a great fight with Chris Murray. Yeah, Chaser. I don't. What more is there to say? You don't really need to sell anybody on Kelly Chase. The listeners know who we're talking about.
Well, it's funny because I'll say this. So you had two-thirds of that line, the line that I talked about with Scott Daniels, with him and Chief Daniels and Janssens. And over the years, I got to know Mark Janssens very well. So the ironic thing about it is I love all three guys, but if I had to say one guy over the other two, it would be Mark Janssens, and he's the guy that I didn't put in this issue. But Janssens is as tough as anybody, yep. And I don't think people realize it, but he is, and he could very well be in this issue. But, I mean, Kelly Chase, I mean, I loved Kelly Chase as a player, but I think since he's retired, I love him a lot more because he's someone that he kind of stays in the fray. Whenever there's some anti-fighting stuff that goes on, he kind of jumps in, you know, with all these know-it-alls up in Toronto. He doesn't mind getting on social media and saying it. And then, of course, in the Ice Guardians, like that final scene, like, I don't know, like he's just someone that to me is everything that's right about how the game used to be. And, you know, talking about like your guys, you know, in Saskatoon when it was him and Twister and Killer and Sharky with the blades. Like, I mean, this is just classic, classic stuff. So, like I say, even just talking about this year, Kelly Chase is just, he's on this list because he's probably maybe the smallest guy on the list. Probably him. I always said him and Bomber. And at this point, Darren Langdon, probably three of the best technical guys. And, you know, just fuck, you know, it's Kelly Chase. You know, he should be in this list. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, another, there you go. Another Blade, another Sass Boy at number 16. Of course, Jolton Joe Koser. Split time this year with the Rangers. And, of course, the ill-fated weird seven games with the Canucks, which was, like, really weird to see. But, yeah, it was sort of obviously kind of getting the end of the line. I mean, he fought Probert again, had a interesting fight with a young Brashear and Chris Murray and Lindros and Brett Lindros. And yeah, again, I mean, like I said, it was really weird to see him in Vancouver. But again, what is there to say about Koser, right? I mean, I think as long as he's in the league, he's got to be on the list, right?
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, as I think back on it and as I'm, you know, looking at, you know, the write-up and everything, I mean, this is probably someone that could have been lower on the list, like maybe in the 20s, let's say, because at this point, like you say, it's towards the end of the line. Maybe this was sort of an homage or like a respect for the career thing, you know, because no matter what age he was, if he hits you with that hand, you're going good night. So that was probably what this was. Like I said, maybe 16 was a little too high at this point in his career, but he's got to be in here somewhere. You know, it's you really can't tell the story about hockey fights in the league without mentioning Joe Koser. So, you know, he had to be in here, but maybe I had him a little too high.
Yeah. It's Joe, but, well, the next guy, another guy that I think is underrated by a lot of people at 15 was Reed Simpson. And again, he is underrated. And there is another guy. I love watching them old Albany tapes. And it's like the dude's like all over them. That and the one year in Hershey had like 40 fights or something. He's all over that DVD too. And unbelievable. Fought everybody. And this, he played 23 games at 21 fights. But I'm a huge fan of Reed Simpson.
There are certain players that no matter whenever you go up a level, and you know, and you know this, but you have to make the most of the opportunity. I remember, especially during the lockout year, we Andrea and myself and a couple of friends, we'd go to Albany a lot. So I got to see a lot of his Albany stuff. And their GM at the time was John Weisbrod. And they had called up a player from the East Coast League. And he played a handful of games. And I said, oh, what happened with this guy? And he goes, he was here a few games. He didn't do anything. He goes, I don't know what he thought I called him up here for. And I always remember that. And with Reed Simpson, it's the exact opposite. No matter where he was, he always made the most of his opportunities. And I think, I mean, you never know how much something like this helps. But I think during the lockout with a lot of these American League games that ended up being on TV, I think it exposed a lot of these guys to a larger audience. So obviously the Devils know what he can do. But now other teams see what he can do, and you never know if a team might have been interested in him, and Lou Lamoriello didn't want to lose him, so you give him more of an opportunity with the big club. But, you know, Reed Simpson, again, no matter where it was, you know, you come up from junior into Hershey, and then you end up with the Devils organization, Albany fighting everybody. And I think there was a time where he was putting up decent amount of points too. I always thought he could be the next Randy McKay with the Devils, but then obviously he went to different teams. But that's who I thought he reminded me a lot of Randy McKay, being in the same organization where you had guys that he would fight anybody and they could put up points too. But I mean, every time we would make the 3-hour trip to Albany, guys like Reed Simpson and Cale Hulse, you know, Skrlak, and forget about who was on the other team because they always had a few guys. They always made the trip worth it. So I'm always grateful to Reed Simpson for that.
No, absolutely. Well, 14. Oh, you got an Islander. And this guy's sort of the replacement for Fekota, right? It was Brent Severn. Played 65 games, 12 tilts. Well, I'll let you talk about Brent Severn. You would know better than anybody.
Well, he was one of the guys that wasn't a replacement for Vekoda because he played defense. That's so true. He was kind of brought in not really to replace anybody, because they actually, when he was here, they had him and they had Richie Pilon, they had Dean Chenault, so they had some pretty tough players on defense. But when he came here, I mean, he made an immediate impression. I don't remember which game it was, but he fought Chris Simon twice in Quebec, did very well in those fights, and fought everybody here. But he's another guy. I don't know. Mike Milbury just when Brent got traded to Colorado, I think he said it was one of the best days of his life. And, that was the year he was actually the replacement for Chris Simon. And so that was the upcoming year for this. Just a ton of respect for the guy, you know, old Western leaguer, really should have probably made the NHL a lot earlier, but he was with the Devils organization and they had a pretty good defense back then. So it was a tough top six to crack. If he was with any other team with the way he was playing in the American League when he was with Utica, he definitely would have been on an NHL roster. He just happened to be with maybe the best defensive team with a pretty good top six. But again, it's just a respecting for him, willing to do whatever it is for the team. And, I got all kinds of time for Brent Severn. Never backed down from anybody. And, again, I was probably accused of putting him high on this, I would think, back in the day. But that's okay, you know.
Yeah.
And I just want to say, like, I feel like I'm doing more of an overview of these guys than rather speaking specifically about that season. But the fact is, this is 25 years ago. I don't remember specifics, really. I'm just going by what's here in the write-up. But you know, I'm sure back in the day it was, oh, yeah, you put Brent Severn at 14. Oh, well, whatever. So.
No, exactly. I mean, yeah, I mean, you can't. I mean, there's a few incidents here with each guy or some guys, you know, that you remember. But, you know, overall, it's like, you know, yeah, come on, listeners, give us a break here. It's 25 years. So,
yeah.
But, 13, Chainsaw, Shane Chirla. I was a massive Chirla fan. But this was actually a year before he had the big face injury and he was done. But, he kind of Dallas, L.A., and New York this year, he kind of played on three teams. But 18 tilts and, you know, Peluso a bunch of times and Darren McCarty. But overall, yeah, I'm a big Shane Chirla fan. I mean, it's a shame the way his career ended. But, yeah, I mean, you talk about a guy wide open. He's fun to watch.
I mean, with Shane Chirla, like, you know, we talk about the face stuff, like the way Grimson just – I mean, Grimson did that to a lot of guys.
Yeah.
But with Chirla – I don't think Chirla would ever be a guy that would be top five or top 10, but he would definitely be top five in entertaining because it was the Rock'em Sock'em robot thing. Yeah. So he could knock guys out, but he could also get knocked out. So when I got this magazine before, I was actually surprised I put him as high as I did, but I don't have my notes from back then. But again, I mean, I have no issue with Shane Chirla being this high. I mean, I immediately, whenever I think of him, I immediately go to the Kevin Maguire fight back when he was with Hartford. So, but
yeah,
you know, again, maybe I'm not biased all the times because he was a Ranger at this point. So I got a couple of Rangers in my my top 25. So,
nothing, hey, it's all good with Shane Chirla.
Yeah,
number 12, of course, Gino Ogic, 55 games, he had 9 tilts. Actually, this probably wasn't a real strong year for Gino. But, you know, he fought Bonvi and Peluso and Potomsky. And I was surprised, actually, going back and looking, that he obviously must have been injured, or, you know, 55 games or whatever with the 9 tilts. That's pretty low number for Gino. But guy was a hero in Vancouver. To be completely honest, he's one of those guys, like we were talking about at the start. I never liked Gino when he was playing. I was never a fan of Ogic. Again, as I'm older, I appreciate him now. But at the time, like in 95, 96, I did not like Gino Ogic. But, he's a hero in Vancouver, though. And he did the role for a while. He did it to a T in Vancouver. I mean, nobody fucked with Burry, so that was the point. Yeah. So,
yeah, I mean, for me, you know, like you remember when the games were here, when we had Sports Channel, and their Sports Channel was a regional network, so they would put on, you know, Sports Channel Chicago games or Sports Channel LA. So I remember the first game he played when he played against Chicago and had, you know, number 66 out there skating around fighting Manson and Grimson. And I'm like, who is this fucking guy, right? And then a couple of weeks later, he's here on Long Island. I think it was his eighth game or something like that. And he's playing here. And I got a chance to meet him. Really, really, really quiet. And, I don't know. And then I obviously over the years, I would see him a little bit. But, you know, quiet guy. I know a lot of people are wishy-washy on him. I don't think he's Tony Twist's favorite opponent. I know Tony's been sort of vocal about his feelings about Gino. But, no, I mean, like you say, maybe not the best year for him. But, I mean, I think he just went into the British Columbia Sports Hall of Fame or something like that. I think I just saw on Twitter. So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, he always made the games exciting. And I always say I'm happy that when I look at the back of his hockey card, it says New York Islanders, that he was here for a spell. So, and again, at that point, past his prime maybe, and I know for a spell here, he had an abdominal injury. And to play the game with an abdominal injury is not easy. And if you're going to start fighting and, you know, grabbing on and twisting and turning and, you know, throwing punches – with a bad abdominal injury is not the easiest thing to do, but he was fun. I mean, it was very interesting the day he was traded for Jason Strudwick. And then the next night they fought each other. That was always interesting because they played, Islanders played Vancouver the next night. So they're traded one day and the next day they're fighting each other. So that was a nice little piece of history.
No, absolutely. Well, it's interesting here. Number 11, Ty Domi, 32 fights this year, and of course he fought Probert a few times, and you know, had some great fights with Simon and Bonvy. Of course, this is the season he famously dropped Ulf Samuelsson for one brief moment. He was a hero of Joe Lazito's. the best line ever, when they were asking the player, they asked Bernie Nichols what Ty should get, and he said a raise. You know, so I don't think anybody in the hockey world was sad to see Ulf get dropped. Interesting, as I was doing the research for this, and I had never seen this until today. Brashear was coming up in Montreal, he actually dropped Domi this year. Buckles him with an uppercut. Check it out, folks. It's on YouTube. It's a little grainy, but it's there. I'd never seen that before. I'd never seen Domi get buckled like that. But, yeah, Ty Domi, number 11.
Well, I think he might be number 11 because of the Samuelsson knockout. I mean, listen, Ty is, regardless of the goofy topics that seem to be popping up recently on the hockey fight boards on Facebook Ty's credentials, even as someone like myself who's not a fan, I had to laugh at some of these people. I mean, you got to give the devil his due. I was never a fan of Ty's. But I got to give the guy credit for the career that he had. I probably could do with a lot of the self-promoting that he did. That sort of bugged me a little bit. I'm sure it didn't help that he came up. I mean, he came up with Toronto, but he really came up with the Rangers. So I'm sure that didn't help either. That Ulf Samuelsson moment is one of my favorite moments of all time. And Ulf deserved it. And Ty was a hero for a little bit in my household. But, you know, I mean, now we're getting into the elite category. We're getting into the top 10, you know, and Ty Domi belongs on the countdown in the top 25 for almost every year that he played. So maybe I could have put him higher, but, you know, I don't know. I don't know my mindset. Maybe back in the day I said, you know, he deserves top 10, but let me put him at 11. I don't know. That could have been something I did too. I don't know.
Well, yeah, and I'll tell you, it took me a long time to warm up to Domi. I hated him with the Rangers. I remember watching these tapes. I'm like, why are you celebrating? You lost. Yeah. Like, he's losing these fights, and he's doing the belt and all that shit. Looking back on it now, it's fucking hilarious. But, I mean, at the time, I was like, who is this little midget? You know, but, and then he got to Winnipeg, and I started to warm on him a little bit. But then when I saw him in Toronto, I'm like, ah, this guy's all right. And then when he did that to Ulf, that was like, all right, I like this guy now. You know, but but yeah, did it. Hey, like you said, at the end of the day, dude did it forever. Fought everybody. His fight card is second to none. Well, he's the all-time leader in fights. I mean, played for a long time. Was a better player than I think people give him, you know, that he should get more credit for. And hey, at the end of the day, with the Leafs and with the, hey, with Winnipeg and Toronto, and when he learned the role and what to do and whatever, nobody messed with Solani and Sundin all those years. And, you know, they got a lot of room, and Domi did his job and knew what to do. And yeah, I mean, say what you want about him, but yeah, like, and what Joe was talking about, somebody in the enforcer group put up that Ty Domi lost 95% of his career fights. It's like, what are we doing here? Like, stop. You're like, you know, I get you don't like Domi, but I think Ty won more than 5% of his fights. I mean, come on. But, yeah.
And the one thing I do, obviously the Samson thing is my favorite thing, but the one thing that I always enjoy was, for fans that are old enough to remember when Winnipeg wanted to go full Euro and they had like their European invasion, and they really didn't have a lot of toughness to protect those guys, and they were just getting lit up every night. You know, opposing players were taking runs at all these European players, and then I think it was Mike Smith was the GM,
yeah,
and he wanted to go full Euro, and then at some point I guess he decided I got to get some toughness, and then he ended up getting Domi and Chris King. So I kind of like that he had to eat crow wanting to go full Euro, and then he had to get a couple of good Canadian boys to kind of settle things down. So,
well, and then they,
I'm not a Ty Domi fan, but I do like that he had to do that.
Well, and that they went on the, like, what was it, an 18 game winning streak or something when they got them? They went on some massive winning streak, and it was just like, yeah, exactly. It was like, yeah, no, him and King were awesome in Winnipeg. That was,
yeah.
Well, speaking of Winnipeg, his 1 year in Winnipeg, well, and then they went to Phoenix, I guess, but the 1 year with the Jets at number 10, Jim McKenzie. He had 73 games, at 18 tilts, and, you know, had some great fight. Well, he always had great fights with Sandy and McCarthy and, you know, Berube and Brashear and Big Jim, man. You know, I always say that I think the NHL is probably lucky he was nice, because he could have body bagged a few guys, I think, if he wanted to. But he's a big, tough dude. And, again, another former guest on the Coliseum Chronicles.
Yeah, I'll never forget this. There was a time I was working a part-time job delivering auto parts. And one day my wife came up to meet me, and then we were driving home. So we had two cars. And all of a sudden I pull over, and she's like, what's wrong, what's wrong? And I go, the Islanders signed Jim McKenzie. And she's like, what? I'm like, I had to stop and tell you, the Islanders just fucking signed Jim McKenzie. I was so fucking happy, right? I'm like, holy shit. So now it's going to be like McKenzie and Vakota, Severin. Like, I'm like, this is amazing, right? And, you know, like, you come to find out. And I had known Jim from when he was at Hartford, and find out it was really down to two teams that wanted him. And it was the Islanders and Chicago, and he picked the Islanders. And, of course, as people know, never played a regular season game for the Islanders, because went to camp that year, and I think camp was in Ontario. I know we got into at least one game, maybe a couple of games. And, well, preseason's over. Now you got to submit your protected players for the waiver draft. Jim McKenzie's left unprotected by the Islanders, and he's the first pick in the waiver draft by Winnipeg. Absolute. I'm working at Bruce Bennett Studios at the time, and we get the facts from the NHL with all the players that was claimed. First pick, right on top, Jim McKenzie, Winnipeg. So I was not happy. But again, a guy that Mike Milbury, you know, I can go on and on all day. But Jim was a short-time unofficial member of the Islanders. And, you know, I mean, like you say, what do you say about Jim McKenzie? He's an absolute killer and really, really a super individual. He's another guy I could go on and on about. I love him so much. But, you know, yeah, I mean, he put the hammer down on a lot of guys.
He did. Well, and another guy, number nine, the Chief, Craig Berube, out in Washington, played 50 games at 13 tilts. Actually, kind of a slow year for the Chief that year, to be honest. But, yeah, I mean, there you go. I mean, another guy fought everybody. I think he's second in career fights behind Domi.
I think you're right.
Yeah, another guy played forever. You know, always, you know, throwing rights. You weren't going to get a left from him. It was all rights, and it was quick, rapid fire, and yeah. I mean, I love Craig Berube. He's awesome. And to see the success he's had as a coach is tremendous.
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, the guys we're talking about now in the top 10, they're all going to be like the same kind of thing. They all deserve it. And yeah, they're all legends in their own right. I mean, at this point, Berube, I think he kind of had a career resurgence with Washington. And then at a certain point, you know, he's playing on the line with Kevin Kaminsky. And then on defense, you got Brendan Witt and Mark Tenorti. And then at a certain point, then you had Chris Simon to that. I mean, it had to be like they had to like be in the locker room before some games going, all right, boys, what do we want to do? Who do we want to kill tonight? You know, but I mean, he's a legend. And when he took over for the Blues, and they kind of got off to that slow start and then won the cup. I think in a certain way, like Berube won that cup for like people. It was like a thing for us, you know, like because, you know, as soon as he took over as coach, all those morons that write articles in up in Toronto and all the bloggers and the insiders, quote unquote insiders. Well, of course, you know, Berube is he's a goon. He doesn't know anything about hockey. Why would you hire Craig Berube? Meanwhile, they neglect to see the road that he's taken to get to that point, and the players bought in and they won a cup. So it's kind of like, you know, good for him and good for us because, you know, it's like, here's a guy. Well, you just think he's a one-dimensional goon, and here he is, played more NHL games than any of these critics ever played, and now he's got a Stanley Cup championship as a coach. So all the people that shit on him can kiss his ass now.
There you go. Absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, it was awesome. And like you said, with this list, and once you get in the top 10, it's like, you know, because again, the next name here, number 8, Marty McSorley. I mean, you know, this was the year, you know, played in LA, and then he, like I said, again, he kind of like the coaster thing. He had those weird 9 games with the Rangers that was kind of odd. But, 18 tilts. He had a really, really good fight with Sandy McCarthy early on. Fought, you know, ran into old Wendell again out in the island. They fought a couple times, and, you know, actually a good fight with Eric Lindros, VL. I mean, it's Marty, man. What can you say? I love Marty. He's great.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, with some of these, you know, like similar, I mean, he came in that trade with Chirla, you know, with the Rangers. He was in that trade from LA. Definitely, to use a golf analogy, I think I'm using it right, on the back nine of his career. But, you know, like say almost 20 guys, 20 fights, fighting guys, you know, legit guys, you know, renewing the rivalry with Wendell from their famous playoff fight and, you know, taking on big boys, Sandy McCarthy, Berube, Rudy, you know, all these guys. Again, maybe more of an homage, but at this point, he still had something left in the tank. And this is when he started with San Jose, even though, you know, that season before was with LA and the Rangers. But, you know, again, with some of these guys, I'm giving them their due for what they had done at that point, even if maybe Marty wasn't the 8th best fighter that year, but he's definitely, to me, if he's not top 10, he's got to be around the top 10.
Yep. No, I completely agree. Well, you know, like you said, with all of them like that, but, you know, the next was Stu Grimson. Of course, he's in Detroit that year, 56 games, 21 tilts. Pretty good year. I mean, again, fought Sandy, had the big, TKO win of actually a McKenzie, you know, had a really solid fight with Probert that year. I don't know. To me, it was always kind of weird to see Stu in Detroit. It was kind of, I never got used to the Grimson in the Detroit uniform, but yeah, Stu, this is kind of really, once Stu left Chicago, I think, you know, he's getting into his prime. He's starting to find his legs and, you know, he became a real force over the next few years.
Well, it's funny because when he was with Chicago, I thought he was sort of like a maniac, you know, like a crazy person. Didn't think he was a great fighter at that point. He was still young. He was still raw. Still, you know, could do some damage, but I don't think he, you know, I thought they had a nice combo, him, Peluso, Manson. I don't think any of them were savages at that point, let's say. And then, like you said, he leaves Chicago. And all of a sudden, you know, Anaheim and Hartford and Detroit, and he is just this absolute assassin. Like his time with Hartford, oh my God, like he's just like killing guys. And even with Detroit, I think it was Rodgers, one of the fights he had with Rodgers, maybe in the playoffs, where it's just like the Stu Grimson that left Chicago. And I know Hawks fans, some of them are very passionate, and maybe they see it differently, but I think Stu was a very tough player with Chicago. And I think after he left Chicago, he was, I mean, that and then some, where he just became this scary, scary individual that could really just, you know, put the lights out with one shot. And I mean, you know, again, same thing, keep saying, I love Stu Grimson. I love the guy. But his stuff post-Chicago, like his Chicago stuff is fun to watch, like seeing him lose his shit against the Leafs and everything. Like, I think his Chicago stuff is fun because, and even in his book, he wrote about some of the stuff that he, you know, the stuff he went through growing up, where he was sort of like a little bit on the wild side. And maybe you saw a little bit of that in his Chicago days. And then maybe once he left Chicago with Anaheim, and then, like I said, going forward, he kind of matured a little bit, and just an absolute berserker out there, just destroying guys.
Yeah, so we got Stu, and then I'm sorry, folks. I'm in and out. I'm hitting pause. I'm chasing my lasagna down here. But number six, Todd Ewan. Actually, and I was surprised. I didn't realize it at the time, but it's like he played 53 games that year. 29 tilts. I think that was a very busy year for Todd. Of course, you with the Ewans, of course, being really good friends with Dean. Obviously, I would assume you've hung out with Todd as well, obviously. Yeah. And unfortunately, with his passing and everything. But this was a big year for the Animal.
You know, we talk about guys who are underrated. And obviously, I think everyone can agree guys like Paul Laws are underrated. I think Todd Ewan, guys like Todd Ewan, I think guys like Darren Kimball, when you look at their resume, even for everything that they've done, I still think they're underrated. I think, you know, Todd obviously made a big splash, you know, with the Prober fights in this second game, I think that was. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know why he seems to be underrated, but I was a Todd Ewan fan before I got to know Dean, and you know, and before I got to ever meet Todd. So I was a fan of Todd's, and I look at his body of work, and you know, for whatever people, you know, people may say, well, I had him ranked too high here, but like you said, 29 fights, and I always felt like he never got his due. Like even in Anaheim, when it was him and Grimson there, like talk about Twin Towers, you know, I always felt like Stu got more publicity, let's say. And I mean, Stu has the nickname, like I said, I think Stu has one of the two best sports nicknames in the history of sports, Grim Reaper. And don't get me wrong, I think they were two guys that when the Ducks first came into the league, they pumped up those two guys quite a bit, like Dallas did when they moved from Minnesota with Basil and Shane Cirulla. But I always felt like Todd didn't get the respect or the credit that he deserved. So maybe in this, you know, for me, I was trying to give him what I thought the credit that he deserved, because I do think he's someone that when people talk about, you know, the all-time greats, and I'm not saying he should be in anyone's top five, let's say, but I do think he's someone that is often overlooked. So, but I think if people take the time, go back, get yourself a Todd Ewan DVD and watch it. And I just liked it. You know, one of the reasons why I like Todd so much is one of the reasons why I like Mick Vokoda so much. They played the game. They played the NHL game with an attitude. And, you know, I always say, like with Vokoda, he played the game in the NHL the way he played the game in the Western League. Like, he didn't give a fuck. And Todd played a similar game, like with a similar attitude. So, yeah. And about him, his unfortunate passing, that really sucked. And it was really gut wrenching to hear, because I did get to know Todd a little bit over the years that he played. And you know, obviously Dean and I are very close. So that was a tough one, but yeah, I mean, I have no issue putting Todd at six, and I urge people that maybe think of him more as an afterthought, because he doesn't have like the glamour name like some of the other bigger name fighters, but I don't think he has to take a backseat to anybody.
No, that's exactly what I did, right? I mean, Ewan was always sort of, you know, he's there, but I ended up, I can't remember who now, but somebody sent me, Todd Ewan player DVD. I was like, all right. So one night I put it in. It was like, you know, goddamn, you know, this is shit. He's better than I thought he was, you know. And I mean, I always knew he was good. I mean, I knew he wasn't a joke or anything. I always knew he was good. But, yeah, you just forget, right? You just see so much stuff over time, you forget. But, yeah, you start watching and it's like, yeah, he was solid, man. No, Ewan was all right. Yep. Well, number five, the Bomber, Ken Baumgartner, one of my favorites. And, of course, this year, Toronto and Anaheim. 72 games, he had 25 tilts, and, of course, he had the famous, this is when he had the big knockout of Dean Malakoff that year behind the net, and, unfortunately, was KO'd by Brad May, but, he had the great fight with Darren McCarty in the preseason. I went back and watched, which was tremendous on YouTube. But Bomber, man, technician, really unorthodox fighter. God, he would have been annoying to fight, I could imagine, but I know it goes without saying how much of a fan you are, but same thing. Yeah, I'm a big, massive Bomber fan, so I love seeing him at five anyway.
Yeah, I think this was one of the ones I got criticized for a little bit because I think he was at this point in Toronto. I think people looked as Domi as like 1A and Bomber as 1B. I never looked at it that way, and. Again, I think once you get to Toronto, I think people that live up there, I can only go by what was put on tapes that I got to see. And I think Bomber did his fair share of interviews and things like that. But I think, again, Ty, with his self-promotion, a lot of the times maybe put himself in some situations that helped him get certain opportunities. I'm sure he was one of the faces of the franchise, and I never looked at Bomber as having to take a back seat to Ty. And even when they were here both playing in New York, it was they had a good rivalry. But to me, Bomber's run here with the Islanders, and I've said it a million times, I mean, it was one of the most fun times that I've ever had as a fan. And the Jim McKenzie story that I told about having to pull over and tell my wife that the Islanders signed Jim McKenzie, the first story similar to that was it actually happened earlier. I was still in college. I was going to St. John's, and I'm on the Grand Central Parkway, and I was listening to Imus. I don't know if people in Canada know who Imus is, but yep. I was listening to Imus, and it's actually Mike Breen, the guy who does the Knicks games, he was doing sports updates at the time for Imus before he hit it big as probably one of the best basketball announcers, I would guess. I know, I don't know. I think he's up there. I mean, I don't watch basketball, but and he said the Islanders traded Mikko Mäkelä for Ken Baumgartner and Hubie McDonough, and I literally almost drove off the road. I was on my way to school. I was like, you got to be kidding me, because I knew about Bomber from the fight tapes and everything, and it was actually the beginning of the season, and LA was on, Sports Channel LA, and they had also played the Bruins, so you get like SBK on your cable. So he had fought Lou Crawford, I think, with the Bruins. He just tuned up Alan Kerr. He fought Alan Kerr that year with the Islanders before he got here. So I'm already a Baumgartner fan. Next thing I know, he's coming here. And it was just unbelievable. And his time here with him and Mick, oh, my God, that was tremendous. But, to me, again, with Bomber, like you say, he must be a real pain in the ass to fight. He had those long arms. I think he was deceptively powerful. I really do, because he wasn't a guy that walked around like, say, Tony Twist with the big muscles or anything. But I don't know, like, if there's – things such as like ligament strength, I think I've heard before, but he had long arms and he hurt guys. So, and he was a technician. So we can make this the Ken Baumgartner episode if you want, but I no problem putting him at five. And like I said, people that, bitched at me at the time about putting Domi at 11 and Bomber at five. Well, you should get your own magazine, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I'm down with it, but, yeah. Well, and then again, number four, another guy that I think I think people, maybe younger people, they don't realize because they saw him in kind of Philly in the rain, and then the end of Boston and but like Sandy McCarthy, when he was in Calgary, when he first came in and in Tampa Bay, he was vicious. And in this one, 75 games, he had 21 tilts. He had an awesome preseason fight with McSorley that's on YouTube. Definitely check that out. They go forever. He had the knockout of Daniels, big win on Grimson and Bonvie and McKenzie a couple times, and Simon and Brashear. Like a young Sandy McCarthy was an animal, man. He was, and I think people forget how good he was.
Well, even in the write-up here, I guess the year before, I had him at number 19. So it says it's like he moved up 15 spots from the year before, and it, based on that year that you're talking about. Yeah. And I mean, Calgary, Sandy McCarthy, you know, like you, older, you know, people that maybe even here, like in this area, that remember him from his time with the Rangers, where I think he was kind of acting like a goof half the time. It was actually really disappointing to see him act like he did with the Rangers, you know, especially, you know, with stuff going on with Eric Cairns, the goofy shit that he did and Theo Fleury. It was a little disappointing because I remember the absolute Terminator that he was in Calgary. And if you want to see prime Sandy McCarthy, you just got to watch his Calgary stuff. And the rivalry he had with Jim McKenzie, like, not a rivalry, like off the ice. I actually think they had the same agent at the time, if I'm not mistaken. So, but those series of fights were phenomenal. And, you know, it was a good time out there. Like, you had Gino in Vancouver, and you had Sandy in Calgary, DeBrusk in Edmonton. So those, McKenzie in Winnipeg, you know. So
Marty in L.A. and, oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, but no, I mean, Sandy McCarthy is his whole body of work. When you take it as a whole, he's like a lot of guys where stuff later in the career isn't the best. But Calgary Sandy McCarthy is, it's insane. Like, just, you want to see a guy kick ass, just, you know, put on the Sandy McCarthy DVD from his Calgary years and just sit back and enjoy. Fuck, he's just amazing back then.
Yep. Well, number three, Probert. And this was his first year in Chicago. Actually, offensively, you know, 78 games, he had 19 goals, 26 tilts. But it was like a really weird year for Probert when you watch, because it really looked like he was disinterested. This is when he gets knocked down by Tamer, and it's just kind of like, it's like he just does, he, like, he'll drop his gloves and it's just kind of, yeah, whatever, hit me and let's get it over with. He has this like really blasé kind of attitude towards fighting for a bunch of fights in a row. Then he turns it up and, you know, he kind of actually drops Reed Simpson in a really good fight in New Jersey. And it's like, oh shit, here's the Probert of old, you know. And, you know, and then he had the pretty good tough loss against Simon in the playoffs. But this was kind of a weird year with Probert. He's kind of up and down, and, you know, sort of, but he kind of gains it back the next couple years, and then, you know, it's the beginning of the end at that point. But yeah, this was a really weird year for Probert.
Yeah, this year was the first year that I didn't have him at number one. I think he was number one at least the year before, maybe a couple years prior to, because that's one of the things it says in here, that the reigning heavyweight champ has been unseated. So, I agree. Chicago, it was like, it's weird to say for us fans watching him with Chicago, that first year was an adjustment.
Oh, yeah.
It really was. Yeah. You know? But yeah, like you say, you talk about the Simon fight in the playoffs. I mean, similar to Sandy McCarthy in Calgary, like when you watch Chris Simon, Colorado and Quebec stuff, like that stuff's bananas too. So, but yeah, I mean, what are we going to talk about Probert? I mean, that hasn't been said by anybody. You know, he's the legend. I have him at number one all time. And, you know, I know I don't see how anyone could have him at, you know, lower than three. I don't know, like, it, depending on if you're a Flyers fan or not. But, I mean, he's the man. He's the legend. And, you know, I'm happy I got to talk to him a few times. He was really cool, so.
Yeah, there you go. How was he talking about fighting? Was he cool with you talking about fighting? I always heard he didn't like really talking about it.
You know, the funny thing is, this is part of, you know, I guess I have to give credit to Jim Cummins on this one, because I had never met Probert with Detroit, and I met him with Chicago, and I had known Jimmy for a few years, and I mentioned to him one time, I said, I would love to talk to Proby, but, you know, everyone says he doesn't like to talk about fights and this and that. And he goes, you could talk to him about whatever you want. And, you know, Jimmy introduced me to him, and I think, you know, it was over a couple of seasons where I would see him when he would come here, or we would go to Philly or whatever. And, you know, the thing he said was, he goes, you know, and I said to him, I said, I know Jimmy said it would be okay, but, you know, is it okay to talk to you about fights? And he goes, you know, the thing is with the media, he goes, everybody, that's all they want to talk about. He says, and after a while, it just, you know, it's just a lot. You know, he goes, I don't mind talking about fighting, but if it's the same reporters with the same questions about the same fights, he goes, I just like to talk about other things. And like you said, he goes, you know, I can do other things, you know, and he goes, I don't mind talking about it, but I got the impression that it was just things with the media where, and we all know the deal, scoring 29 goals in a season, making the All-Star team. We know that he could play. And I guess maybe if people would have spoken about that a little bit more, maybe he would have been a little more open about it. But I get the impression that with the fans, I don't think he had an issue. And he didn't have an issue talking about it with me. And I don't think I was the only one. But I think, you know, having Jimmy put in a good word with me, I think definitely helped. But I get the impression that he would talk about fighting with people. Like if you're just hanging out, talking about it, he would talk about it. I get the impression it was something more with the media that it just got old after a while. But to sit down or bullshit with a fan, I get the impression he didn't have a problem with that.
Well, there we go.
Yeah.
Well, like you said, we talked about him earlier. Number two, Chris Simon. I mean, big 64 games, 16 goals, 14 tilts. I mean, you know, a big knockout of Buckberger, had the big Probert playoff fight, fought Domi a bunch of times, did really well. Great fight with Sandy. Long-haired Simon, man, the Undertaker. He was this is it. This is when he's starting to come into his own, and he's a bad dude, man.
I met Chris. I must sound like a total jackass. Like, hey, I know this guy. I met that guy. But, you know, like I said, I put myself in a position to kind of, you know, like get to know these guys a little bit. And I think, you know, like I said, I think that helped me out in the long run. But I met Chris when he was a rookie with Quebec and, you know, prior to the Undertaker hair and everything. And he was just this big kid, really, really quiet, you know, like just a really good guy to talk to. And then, you know, as he starts establishing himself and the hair grows long and he's in Colorado, he had that low voice that you know, if anyone's ever seen him in an interview, you have that low voice, and then come out with that long hair and the beard, and now he has that low voice, and you're like, this guy is fucking terrifying. I'm glad he's on my side. Like, just, I mean, another guy that I'm glad I look at the back of his hockey card. It says New York Islanders. I was happy to have him here. I mean, early Chris Simon was devastating, and I think you saw it, you know, throughout his career. I mean, with Washington, the way he was scoring goals, and, you know, he would still fight guys and everything. You know, I mean, again, I'm going to gush about Chris Simon. I'll always have a soft spot for Chris Simon because he was always, always very good to me. Always would downstairs, like in the hallway, would always seek me out, always to say hello, see how things are going. So, I mean, I love the guy. And, but yeah, I mean, there's, you know, just even going back to, you talk about like games on TV when Halifax played Fredericton and he dropped Brashear on there. And that was like really young Chris Simon. But then you see what he did with Quebec. Like, if you think about it, like having him and Twist on the same team.
Yeah.
It's mind boggling that those two guys would be on the same team. And it's unfortunate that it was only for a short period of time. But, you know, when you would, you know, and like I said, fortunate enough, I could go to games at the Coliseum. I could go to games in New Jersey. I could go to games, the Garden or Philadelphia. And Quebec was always my second favorite team from the time I was a kid. So you go and you watch these games and you see them both warming up and you're like, oh, I hope they play. And then next thing you know, they come out and they're both playing and it's like, this is awesome. So, I mean, but Chris Simon, you know, I think he could have been number one, but, he had to settle for, you know, number two.
Well, there you go. Number one, Tony Twist, 51 games, 14 tilts. This is the year, of course, that he had the devastating, he broke Ray's face and great fight with Stoyanov and the Antoski knockdown and kind of got the better of Probert. Although him and Probert never had their real signature fight. None of their fights were really that great. But, yeah, other than the kind of the setback with LaRue who cut him open at the end of the year, Twist was an animal, man. And this is right, you know, those last couple years in St. Louis. Yeah, he was the scariest dude. I mean, and I always said you could always tell he was feared because guys would act different when they fight him. Like, because, I mean, watched Reed Simpson or Darren Langdon, like, covering up, and they never did that against anybody. But it's just like, But Twist would get you, if he got you bent over and in a bad spot, no one was going to stick around. They were just like, screw it, fuck this. And they just dropped to their knees. They're like, I'm not dealing with this shit. Because you couldn't fight back out of it. Like other guys, you could, they got you in a bad spot, you'd work your way out, you could get back up, and you weren't, you know, worried about it. But when Twist got you in that position, it was like, now I'm done. I don't want to stick around for this. And it was just like, and it's a real shame with the motorcycle accident. And, you know, because he was, I believe it was Jamie Rivers when I had him on my show, and he was talking, like, he was a free agent, and he was set to sign, like, a huge contract. And I can't remember, I have to ask Rivers again. Philly. It was with Philly, right? Philly. I was going to say yep. Boston or Philly, but yeah, it was Philly. Philly. Can you imagine Twist in Philly? And at that time, like a primed up in his, because I think he was only in, like, 31, 32, and, you know, whatever, you could say whatever you want, what he was on, or whatever. But nonetheless, he was into it, ready to kill someone, and primed. Like, he was just a man at this point. And there's no doubt he should have been number one on your list, without a doubt.
Yeah, and I think this was the one year where guys were still willing to fight him. Like you said, I think he had 14 fights. I wonder if that's the most he had with St. Louis. But and actually, he was someone that I used to, you know, once he started taking his spot at number one on these, I used to joke around with him when he would come here. I'd say, I made you. Look at this. I made your career, you know, and we would always laugh about it because obviously I didn't make his career, but I would always joke around with him and say, you're you because of these magazines. So, because he ended up being on the cover three times.
Oh, yeah.
He was on the cover three times. So I would always bust his balls and say that I made his career and he owed me some of his contracts, but obviously that was just a joke. But yeah, this, you know, he's a guy, again, a lightning rod on the message boards back in the day and now on Facebook and the groups, because you get the people that absolutely love him, that think he never lost a fight and is invincible. And then you get the people that hate him because he's so beloved by other people. And I don't necessarily get that. I guess that's just how some people are. But I don't really know how you could be a hockey fight fan and not like the guy. Like, he's
– yeah.
There are so many guys who've done this job that don't want to talk about it, that will say they only do it because, you know, not that they're forced into it, but I knew if I wanted to progress in my career, I had to start fighting. And here you have a guy that not only embraces the role, like, he'll talk about it, and he loves it, and he loves to fight. So when I see people, and I don't know if it's people that are jealous that he gets more love than their favorite fighters, and I don't know, because you always see, like, whenever a Twist topic comes up, it's always the same people going, well, whatever, I like this guy. And I'm always like, so what's the point? But I don't understand, for a guy, and, you know, he had the knockout power, he has the name, he was very once he went back to the Blues, he's all over, you know, interviews and doing stuff for them. So he's out there, and he's a guy that just totally embraced the role. I don't know how you can't love the guy. Now, whether you love him to the point where you make people sick, that's another story. But for the amount of heat this guy takes, I just, from hockey fight fans, I will never, ever understand it. Like, he should be, you know, the poster boy. Like, another guy like Jarrett Burnett loved the role, and a lot of people don't really care for him, and I don't understand that. You don't have to, you know, love the guy, but the guys that embrace it, and, you know, and obviously for you know, Bernie played some games in NHL, but Tony Twist was a mainstay for a few years, and people that shit on him, I don't get it. But, you know, to each their own. But yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know if Tony listens, but Tony, I made your career with these. No, again, I'm just kidding, but it was fun. He was always someone that I love talking to, because it was never a question of, hey, do you think Twist will talk about this fight? Because he would talk about anything, and he was really a personable guy. I would actually love to reconnect with him, but I haven't made the effort. I don't know. He's not on social media, but again, I have no issue putting him at number one here or any of the other times I put him at number one. So,
no, absolutely. He was a dominant force at that time. And yeah, say, like, again, I don't get the hate for Twist. It's, well, he's on roids. He's only good because he's on roids. Oh, this is St. Louis Twist, not Quebec Twist. Like, okay, what, like, he wasn't on him in Quebec. I saw him in junior. He was massive in junior too. So it's like, yeah. You know, come on. Like, I'm not going to say he was on him, he wasn't on, whatever. If he was on him, I can guarantee he wasn't the only one that was on him, folks. But it was just like, who gives a shit? It's just like, whatever. I never understood that. That, I'm like, what test, did he ever test positive? I've never heard of a positive test, so I don't know where you're getting it. You just assume, and it becomes like folklore, right? Like, whatever. And it's like, you see him, and it's like, yeah, he's a big dude, but like, he's not Patrick Cote, LNAH big. Like, right. You know, so I'm like, oh, okay, you know. But, yeah, anyway, I mean, regardless, you know, roids or not, fight, he was toughing with Junior. Like, he did that shit in the SJ, or in the SJ, in the WHL. He dropped dudes back then, too. So it's like, yeah, he was just, and in the IHL and all the way up, he was a vicious dude. He fought, I mean, if people haven't, I would suggest, go to my YouTube, Fourth Line Voice on YouTube. Type in Tony Twist, talks about the enforcer role, and listen to that interview. And that's like, yeah, he's serious. He's like, he was serious, and he fought to knock you out, put you through the ice. And there was no good job, buddy. Let's work out in the summer. Good job, bro. Good luck to you, bro. No, it was like, I'm going to knock your head off. And it's like, how do you not, you know, hey, the dude took the role serious, and no one messed with the Blues when he was around. So,
yeah. And the thing, two things that you said, one, the thing with the roids, you know, whether he was on them or not, I don't know. I don't know of any test, but like you say, you can kind of look at guys and be like, okay, so I agree with you 100%. If he was doing them, he definitely wasn't the only one.
No.
But more importantly, the second thing, and you brought it up, because I see people making this argument all the time. Well, he's not the guy he was in Quebec. I think Quebec Twist was still pretty fucking good. Like,
yeah.
I see that all the time, and I'm like, what Quebec fights did you watch? Because Twist in Quebec was still pretty fucking good, and he still, you know, hurt guys. So, you talk about knocking out Peluso, you know, again, it's like Quebec's version of Tony Twist was still very good. So I laugh when I hear people go, oh, that's the first St. Louis tenure of Twist, or that's the Quebec version of Twist. The Quebec version of Twist is still better than most guys. So what the fuck are you talking about?
Well, when he's in Peoria, even, he's knocking out, he's dropping Link Gates and Kerry Clark and all, like, okay, yeah, he was good then too. Like, yeah, I don't understand this. Like, well, that, it's like, well, he was better in his second term in St. Louis. Well, yeah, he's also 7 years older and in his prime. Like, you know, right. I mean, that's the thing. These guys, like that's the thing with Ray and his jersey. Yeah, he got better with the jersey. Well, he also entered his prime with his jersey on too. Like, these guys get better as they get older. I mean, into their prime, and then you hit that point, and then you start the downhill, like, as with everyone, they always, and there's a decline, but it's like, yeah, Twist was hitting his prime in St. Louis the second time around, so it's like, yeah, so, he's better now, well, yeah, it's called evolution, of course he's getting better, like, but yeah, it's like, yeah, but yeah, Twist at number one, there's no argument from me on that, but, well, man, that was fun to go back in '95, '96 and to kind of get in your head and talk about it and talk about your interactions with these guys. I've never actually asked you about that stuff, so it was cool to hear those stories. And I know you got to get barbecuing and I got a lasagna to take care of, but no, I think we gave the folks a little flashback into '95, '96 and Joe Lazito and his tough guy rankings. But I want to thank you for taking the time to come on today. It was great.
Well, yeah, I have dead animals I got to get on my grill. I don't know if that offends PETA, but nah, man, I like I said before we started recording, I could do this every night. You know, I really could. This was easy for me. This was a lot of fun. And, you know, for you people out there listening, I hope you enjoyed it, but because I know I did. This was a blast. You know, it kind of brings you back to 25 years ago, back when these guys actually made a difference and they weren't, you know, looked upon, you know, with all the negativity that the, as you call them, the Gen Zs look at these guys now. So you know, but they're idiots. So, but yeah, no, this was great. I'm really happy to have done this, and I'm sorry if I yammered on too long.
No, it's tremendous. And for those listening, I encourage you to check out Joe's show at the Coliseum Chronicles. He just had a part two with Rick Hayward's out, and I'm really enjoying it. I haven't finished it all yet, but yeah, I'm really enjoying Rick as a guest. You've had great guests, and yeah, Mick Fakota, Bolton, Asham, all those guys. You guys hear me ramble about it every episode. I'm always talking about Joe's show, but definitely check it out. And it certainly will not be the last time I have you on, my friend, but I want to thank you again. And it was a lot of fun. Actually, we'll have to break out the other issues, and we'll have we'll go down some timelines here, and because, like I said, it's a fun kind of time capsule piece. You know, it's certainly a different time and a different era, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely, we could do that. We could go over maybe to mix it up a little bit. We could do the section that it had in the Fischler book, because that was a little bit different. But yeah, whatever you want to do, man. Whatever you need me, I'm here, and I'm ready to go.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And I'll let you go. But thanks again, Joe. Appreciate it.
And you people that don't like fighting, how many of you did you walk out and get a coffee while that was on?